And a gobble, 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 gobbledygoo. Welcome to the HalfGuarded.com Power Hour. I'm your host, Zachary Turducken Gilbert. Here's my co-host, Dan, don't pass me the potatoes, Ford.
I love the potatoes. What are you talking about? Keep those cranberries away from me, though.
There you go.
Like, I don't even want to look at those things.
It feels good to be back, first off.
It's good to have you back.
Yeah, thank you. It feels good to be back here in the Power Hour studios. Wes did a great job filling in. We'll get to Wes a little bit later with NFL Roundup. But I kind of have a little theory on why we had audio issues last weekend. And that's Roger Goodell. I think he heard about me putting together the puzzle pieces, and he's trying to silence me on the Power Hour. So, Goodell, got my eyes on you. Watch it. I know you're coming
after me. You've always had your eyes on Goodell. Yeah. Mostly because of his strong ginger features.
Yes. He's in that beautiful jawline. But here we are, Thanksgiving week. Pretty big weekend in college football. Pretty big weekend in the NFL. But let's focus on something that happened last week. And that's Texas losing to Kansas. And the last time Texas lost to Kansas, FDR was still alive. Hitler was still alive. World War II hadn't even started.
Yes.
Social Security, I don't even think existed yet. It may have, but it was like in its infancy.
Yeah, when they last beat the FDR was just the guy famous for ending the Great Depression. He was not yet the hero who had saved us from the Nazis and the Japanese.
Yeah. He was just molesting some girl.
He had a whole half of his presidency still to go.
He wasn't even down in Colorado Springs molesting some young girl yet.
Look, and it wasn't Colorado Springs, was it? It was Hot Springs, Georgia.
Yeah. All right, but let's focus. Texas loses to Kansas. Charlie Strong hasn't officially been fired, but he's fired.
Right? This reminds me so much of Rich Rodriguez at Michigan, because both of them are going to be done in 3 years. Both of them were super successful coaches at a mid-major who took a job way outside of their region that they had really no idea what they were getting into other than, well, shit, I mean, it's Texas. And in Rich Rodriguez's case, well, shit, it's Michigan. It's got to be good.
Look at this paycheck, yeah.
Yeah, like, fuck, I've heard of Michigan. They got to be great. And then both got there, and they were following longtime coaches who had gotten very shitty at the end of their coaching careers. They'd had nowhere near as much talent as they expected to have, and they completely fucked up all booster relations.
Yeah, and they didn't have that network that you really need for recruiting. Like you said, they went to regions where they didn't really know the high school coaches as well. And that really matters, because when you're strong, you go to Texas, you don't know this high school coach, but he knows some guys from Baylor or Texas Christian or Oklahoma or Oklahoma State a little bit better. He might start pushing his players to go that way instead of Texas just because he doesn't know or trust you. And that's not a bad thing on the high school coach's part, but you haven't developed a relationship with those coaches yet, and that really matters, because these are coaches who are looking out for the best interests of their players.
Both of them, like, completely fucked up their coordinator hires on the other side of the ball. Yeah. Like, in Michigan's case, they had three different defensive coordinators, and Texas had three different offensive coordinators. And both of them, like, Rich Rodriguez came in and he wanted to run a 3-3-5. Everybody told him, hey, we got a lot of good 4-3 personnel, and most of the high schools run 4-3 around here. Nope, we're running a 3-3-5. It was terrible. It didn't work. Charlie Strong showed up in Texas going, we're going to have a smash-mouth, power-running offense. Everybody said, you know, like, nobody does that in Texas, right? Like, we all throw the ball 80 times a game. Nope. Yeah, we're going to be a smash-mouth, downhill-running team. 14 coordinator hires later, and he was like, ah, shit, I fucked that up, didn't I? Yep, you sure did.
But Strong, probably out at Texas, not officially, but unofficially out.
That's the final parallel with Rich Rod, is that Michigan waited until after the Bulls to finally fire him, even though everybody knew he was fired.
Yeah,
and Texas
really
is doing the same thing.
I don't hate that move, though, because you are letting him finish it out.
It's just shitty. Maybe in a different era that was the right move, but in today's like hyper media environment, it's worse. Yeah. Because in Rich Rod's case, it cost him a head coaching job, because he was I believe he was lining up the Maryland job. He was all set to take the Maryland job, and then Michigan was like, "Eh, we might keep you." and then Maryland ended up hiring Randy Edsall.
No, I think in this situation,
he missed out on a job, and Charlie Strong, like, this guy's being, like, having to hear that he's fired for, like, 2 weeks and on Twitter constantly.
But I think with Strong, though, to be fair, I think everyone kind of knew if Strong got fired, he probably would sit out a year. It looks like he probably will sit out the next year.
I don't know. That state job, the NC State job might be opening up, and that makes a lot of sense for Charlie.
Maybe. I think there's better. I think if you wait a year, there's going to be a lot of programs that Strong could go to and rebuild super quick. Looking at you, Tennessee.
He's not getting the Tennessee job.
I love him at Tennessee.
But he's not getting it. Like, you don't get like a blue chip coaching job after you just fucked up a blue chip job.
This is Tennessee. They're not very smart. Gotta remember.
They're blue. Nah, he's not getting that job. Like, he is now Will Muschamp, where his like, if he wants to coach at a blue chip program, it'll have to be as a coordinator. Or he can go take, like, a South Carolina-level job, which, you know, Cincinnati,
well,
NC
Tennessee
State, that's
Tennessee really
what those
that
are.
Far? Oh, is Tennessee really that far from South Carolina?
Really?
Yes,
it is. Yes, really? It is. It's very far above South Carolina.
I just don't think Tennessee is that good of a program anymore.
It is. I mean, they've had some of the best recruiting classes in the SEC. It's just they have a dunderhead who doesn't know how to manage the talent.
Regardless of me being right about this and you being wrong, Strong gone. Looks like Herman's going to be the guy in Texas. Is this really the right hire for Texas, though?
Who else are you going to hire? Who makes more sense?
No,
it's almost like it makes too much sense.
That's what I mean. Does this really work out, though?
I would say yeah, because Tom Herman has been, like, amazing everywhere he's been. So unless he has, like, personal problems that derail him, I don't see how he's not going to be great there.
And he's got that little base built in Houston, which is turning into not the worst little recruiting bed to look at, especially for Texas.
Yeah.
So, but there are some other jobs I want to talk about. Texas, yeah, it's important, but let's be honest, it gets a shit.
I mean, the one thing about it is, like, I don't underestimate Texas's ability to fuck this up because nobody actually runs it. Like, this is the same thing that happened after Mack Brown. They don't really have an athletic director. They have somebody who has a position, but that guy has no power at Texas. Because boosters and the school president basically runs the athletic department and the football team in particular, because you got a bunch of dick swinging oil dudes who want to be in charge of things, which means the athletic director is just some dude. Like, if you're the athletic director at Texas, it means you get to be in charge of the volleyball team. You're not in charge of anything that actually generates revenue, because a bunch of oil dudes are.
And that was talking Texas. But let's move on to LSU. Jimbo to LSU is heating up more, right? We're doing our Jimbo watch.
He's straight up flirting. Like, he is reciprocating this love and affection. Although he is a sexting guy. So this might just be an elaborate ploy to get Florida State to pay him $12 million a year.
Which, good for him if that's what happens. So, but let's say Jimbo LSU, right? That opens up FSU.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like FSU is going to be, like, kind of up the paddle with, I mean, up the creek without a paddle here. Because it feels like the one guy you really wanted, the one crown jewel of this coaching class of guys who are going to go anywhere, is going to Texas now.
Sure. I mean, he is the best guy.
Yeah. So, but I do look at Western Michigan's coach. Name slips me.
PJ Fleck.
PJ Fleck. But I think he's going to Oregon. I think that just, it makes too much sense. Unless Frost, I don't think you think Frost will go to Oregon. So I think probably be Herman who ends up going to Oregon. So what does that mean for FSU?
PJ Fleck.
Yeah, sorry.
Willie Taggart. FSU, Willie Taggart is right there at Tampa.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Willie Taggart makes a lot of sense to me because he's already in Florida. He's got deep Florida ties. He played high school football in Tampa. He's really turned South Florida around over many years now, and he's more of a pro-style guy, which tends to be more of what Florida State looks for. He is more of a smash-mouth, run-oriented guy than Florida State's used to. Florida State's,
really
going back to Bowden
that.
Is more of a pass-happy. Like, yeah. Florida State is a team that likes to have a pass-happy coach.
Yeah, but I think Florida State is a school that could stand to go a little more power, especially in the ACC, because there's not a ton of schools really doing that in the ACC right now. Going a little
especially
more power,
because Florida State can get whoever the hell they want in the state of Florida.
That's the main point. They have the pick of the litter in Florida, right?
So Florida State can pretty much do whatever the fuck they want to do at this point.
I've got a backdoor idea. Your most success at FSU is with a Bowden. Bring in both Bowden boys. Co-head coach.
Okay, well, the problem with that is that Tommy is a useless imbecile.
Mm-hmm.
And Terry is a fat cheater. So I don't know how well that works.
I think that works. And I think you got to reward the Bowden boys for setting up Paterno. I mean, setting up Sandusky, which set up Paterno.
Sure.
Which let Bobby Bowden be the winningest coach ever. So sure. I think people forget that. So I FSU rewards the Bowden family. The Bowdens are back. Back at FSU.
I think the main reason the main reason that won't happen is because if they hire that many Bowdens, like, Jeff will sneak his way back into the building, and they don't want that.
I think we do. I think we just want all three Bowden boys running that room.
But Terry Bowden, Terry Bowden is the only Bowden son who's even remotely competent.
Yeah.
I will say that. And his illegitimate son, Chuck Amato.
But was there anything else from last week that you got, besides your boys at Michigan not playing so hot versus Indiana?
Did you notice Ohio State, like, shitting the bed, too? Did you notice that?
Well, Michigan State, they play
hard. Terrible? So, is the second worst team in the conference and damn near beat them?
But is there anything? Is Michigan State really better than Maryland?
Did you notice JT Barrett played like pickled ass again?
And they won. More grit coins for Ohio State. But anything else you noticed from this past week? Was there anything that grabbed your attention?
Clemson responded well to losing to Pitt. They came back and they walloped Wake Forest, which was a good thing. And Houston beat the shit out of Louisville. So that killed Louisville's shot at a national championship.
And people forget, no other team in college football has two better wins than Houston now. And no other team in college football has lost to SMU and Navy. Yeah.
Like, they'd be in the playoffs right now if they hadn't, because everything's gone their way.
But speaking of the playoffs, we're getting closer to playoff time in the NFL. So let's go to the NFL Roundup with big West Coast West destiny. Click clack. What's that? It's the NFL Roundup on HalfGuarded.com Power Hour. I'm Zachary Gilbert. This is my co-host, West Coast West. Welcome back.
Greetings, sir.
Welcome back, actually.
Yeah, I was gonna say welcome back to what you were born to do. Like I said, when I stepped in, I knew I couldn't fill the shoes, but I just tried to walk the same path. So it's good to be back my place.
And you know what, Wes? If you look behind you, there's only one set of footprints. So much like Jesus, I was right behind you the whole time.
Oh my God. Well, I figured you and I walking together, there would be only one set of footprints because the other would always be willing to carry the other.
And I thought you carried the show well.
Well, I tried. It was a good time. Unfortunately, the good times, before we go any further, we need to take a moment. In fact, I'll go ahead and play the music right now. Jay Cutler last week, torn labrum, out for the year. This is the demise, possibly, of the Chicago Bears. Could be the end of the Jay Cutler run in Chicago. What are your thoughts overall, at both past and future, Jay Cutler?
I want to look ahead. I'm not a man who looks in the past. I look behind me when I'm driving. I look ahead. Yeah. And when I look ahead at this highway, I'm looking at the Jets, and I see Matt Forte. I see Brandon Marshall. And what's missing? Jay Cutler. So Jay Cutler's Bears legacy will live on next season with the New York Jets. Just write it down. It's going to happen. Guaranteed.
It feels right. I will say that much. You throw it out there and it sounds good to the ear. I didn't even think about the three-headed monster being reunited in New York. There's just
Maybe you bring in Mark Trestman as offensive coordinator and you just get that like 2014, 2015 Bears right back.
Well, they were so successful. I don't know why you wouldn't want to get that band back together. So I'm going to hold you to this. And if it doesn't happen, I'll be severely disappointed.
I think where Cutler and Romo go are like my two most interested. Where are these two quarterbacks going to go next year?
Yeah.
And who's going to be the bigger failure? It's going to be a disaster both ways.
So let's just say in your magical world, which I would love to live in, Jay Cutler goes to the Jets. Tony Romo, where does he end up?
Bears.
Oh, I see. He just sits right in there and takes.
Yeah, he slides right into the Bears, gets hurt week three, then retires.
Yeah.
I think that.
Yeah. Can you imagine Tony Romo trying to operate in Chicago once it gets cold in November? I think you're right on the money. He won't even make it there. So maybe we.
Well, he is an Illinois guy. Maybe the cold weather is what he needs. Superman needs the rays of the sun. Romo needs to be cold. You don't really get that in Dallas.
I'm just wondering if they took the cold out of Romo. He's been living a high life for many years now in Dallas in several different ways, and I'm wondering if he has that dog in him anymore to go out there in December and grind it out.
People forget this, but Tony Romo spends summers in Wisconsin going to a water park in Wisconsin, and I can't imagine it being that hot, even in the summer in Wisconsin.
That's true. That's true. Well, he's probably a tougher guy than most people give him credit for. In all honesty, yeah. he's the butt of a lot of jokes, but he's been through a lot. So, again, I'm on board with your plans, and that's what this offseason's all about more than anything else. Cutler Romo watch 2017.
Yeah. We'll go ahead and start it now. Another scenario for Romo, like following the footsteps of Cowboy legend Emmitt Smith, ride out your days in Arizona. Great place to retire.
Now, see, that to me on the surface, despite what you just said about the constitution of Tony Romo, that makes a little more sense to me. It's not really that far away. He can still golf freely wherever he chooses in the state of Arizona. I think that may be a better fit. And they're used to having a banged up quarterback there, so it'll be no big deal in Arizona.
No big deal. And he's used to having a pretty good O-line and really talented wide receivers to throw to.
Just for 1 year, we could get Romo to Fitzgerald. If the timelines are going to intersect, now's the time to do it because they're both running out of
time. And speaking of running out of time, kind of running out of time here in the NFL season.
It's Thanksgiving
week.
And I know how you feel about this, but this is a big one. The biggest?
The biggest and most important, the best. We're going to have the best NFL Thanksgiving ever. It's going to be fabulous.
It sure is, and it's an all-day buffet of Thanksgiving games. I guess before we get into it, is there anything that you want to touch on from this past week that'll really set us up for what we're going to talk about this Titanic Thursday, the games that we had?
I think I look at a few games that mattered, what really made the difference last week. Detroit getting a win versus Jacksonville, a game they should have won, but they still won. So Detroit's now a team that's winning games they should win, which we're not used to. Minnesota getting the victory over the Cardinals. The defense is back in Minnesota. You had a special teams touchdown, an interception return for a touchdown, like three sacks, I think, another turnover. So the Minnesota D showing some signs of life, and Minnesota needs that defense to do well. The other big game I look at, Redskins going in, beating Green Bay on the national stage. Kind of Kirk Cousins. Is he elite?
Is he elite? He's halfway there. He's Eli. He's not Eli. Don't get me wrong. There's only one of those. But
yeah,
I think the point I'm trying to make is that Kirk Cousins is starting to step away from the pack of those intermediary quarterbacks, that kind of slightly above average, and he is sustaining the success that he had last year. I think that's the most important thing. So I am fully on board with what they're doing in Washington. And I think if you're the Dallas Cowboys, for instance, I know you're hot, but you have to be looking in that rearview mirror at a team like the Redskins, who isn't that far behind, and they're not even the first team sitting behind you in the division.
No. Oh, and another game, there are actually two more games that really impact this Thanksgiving. Indianapolis getting a pretty big win, especially considering that the Houston Texans lost Monday night over Tennessee, a division foe. So Indy's back in the playoff race now, in the division race in the South. Yep. And Pittsburgh beating Cleveland. Pretty big win.
Very big win.
For Pittsburgh.
Well, hey, as you said, you have to win the game. This is like a Trent Dilfer moment. You have to win the games that you need to win in the National Football League. And that's exactly what the Pittsburgh team.
Yeah. So that sets up a matchup on Sunday. We'll start from the top, go to the bottom.
Okay.
Okay. We're going to end the night. Pittsburgh Indy. Then I believe at 3:30-ish, Dallas, Washington. And we're going to start the day with a little Minnesota Detroit. All these games matter for the playoffs. We've never had this on a Thanksgiving day before where every team needs to win.
It's going to be different. I got to say, you know, you usually have at least one, if not two, if not three games where you can show up wherever it is that you show up, start downing your beverages, slamming back those snacks before you get to the main course on Thanksgiving, and you can just kind of loosely watch a little football. It's always a good way to get yourself away from the crowd if you're not interested in the conversation that's going on. This year,
maybe,
however,
your uncle brings up politics, and you're just like, you know what? No.
Oh dear God. Yeah, that's where you go. It's the two-pronged approach. You try to find whatever pets may live in the home, and then you try to find a television and watch a little bit of football. But this year, it's the marquee thing. It's what everybody's going to be looking at. And you'll have to watch intently because let's start with Minnesota at Detroit. I mean, this could be for the division when we look back on it.
No, I think this game right here, I'm not going to say it's a deciding factor, but it's going to be one of those straws that's going to break the camel's back. And with Minnesota winning last week, I think they got to feel confident coming in. And I think Detroit should feel confident. So this is two teams riding high right now. Like, Minnesota's trying to do the uptick thing, come back. Detroit's trying to just prove that they belong on top. So I'm really interested in this one, especially how the Minnesota secondary, even with all the injuries, is going to do versus Stafford, who's been the really kind of like a low-key MVP this year.
Yes, he has. Yes, he has. I believe we alluded to him on a previous episode as a kind of a dark horse character that could step in and it becomes
reality. I was going to say Detroit last week won with 20 rushing yards, I think, total for the team. Like, this is all on Stafford's back at this point.
It sure is, and you make a great point. This is a great matchup. It's that secondary versus the lone weapon of the Detroit Lions, but a big one in Matthew Stafford. And of course, I'm not dismissing the wide receivers. They play well, but the ball has to come out of the hands of one man. Both teams on a winning streak. I mean, this is as big as it gets. I can't ever really remember being as excited as I am for a Lions game. That's for sure. And especially not on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, especially one that's Minnesota-Detroit. And to check the line in this game, Detroit's coming in at a 2.5 favorite. So kind of a pick 'em, really, for the NFL.
Yeah.
Spreads there. I can't trust Detroit to win when they need to. I just don't believe it. I'll have to see it. I know this team's different than past Detroit teams, but there's something there. It is Detroit. I'm going to take Minnesota.
I'm with you. Because this team is supposedly different, but it will always be the Detroit Lions until they prove otherwise. Not that Minnesota has this storied history of clutch victories and things of that nature, but I just feel like their habit as of late has been winning more so than the Lions, who I feel like the Lions are riding some unknown wave right now. And who knows, maybe that helps their mental state. They come out, they just sling it around, and they finally put the dagger in the Vikings, but nah, I can't pick it. I won't do it.
Yeah. I'm going with Minnesota. And to do some deep analysis on this, Minnesota secondary is getting healthier. And if Detroit can't run the ball and that secondary can shut down Stafford or get in Stafford's face with a pass rush, Detroit's in big trouble. This is a team that has a workhorse or even like a mid of the line running back they can go to. Their best running back's Theo Riddick, who's a pass catcher.
Yeah, well, 20 rushing yards says it all, so you're not exactly talking about a dynamic offense, and you're right. It's Minnesota has one mission, and you have to think they'll feel pretty good about their chances if they can not even shut down Matt Stafford, but just contain Matt Stafford.
No, and Stafford's a guy, and Stafford's a quarterback who's prone to making mistakes and throwing interceptions. He's a gunslinger is what he does. He's going to force the ball places you shouldn't. Minnesota can capitalize on mistakes. This one could get ugly really quick.
I agree, and a little bit of a tangent here, but speaking of gunslingers, speaking of duels, here's a little 1920 history for you. Urban legend states that the Chicago Tigers and the Decatur Staleys challenged each other to a Thanksgiving duel in Chicago, with the loser being relegated out of the league at the end of the season. Ooh. Now, how does that sound? Wouldn't that spice things up a little bit?
That, you want to get ratings up. I mean, you take the Browns, and what's another team no one really – and, like, Jacksonville.
Jags.
Yeah. And who wins – I think Jacksonville wins the gunslinger battle there.
I think they do.
Who in Cleveland can do anything accurate?
Yeah, well, it'd be Blake Bortles versus insert name here. Whoever is healthy enough to put on the uniform. Yeah. I think right now it might be one of the McCowns. So as a result, I'd have to pick the Jags as well. But that would really put a lot of sauce on an already tasty Thanksgiving if you knew one team was headed for some sort of minor league. It's like soccer overseas where you have to earn your way back into the NFL. I think there's something to it.
I think that's the way to go. And then maybe if ratings do end up down this year, something Goodell could kind of look at.
I'm with you there.
Ratings will not be down for this game. Washington travels to Dallas. Dallas, touchdown favorite. We were kind of talking, you know, back and forth earlier, and I think we both kind of like Washington here. But why is that? Do we just think Dallas is due, or is Washington really kind of doing it right now?
Well, I think it's a combination of both, but it's probably more Dallas is due because on paper, and if I look at how these teams have performed in the games that I've watched, I would pick Dallas pretty much every time. I think they're the better team overall. But that being said, it's tough to sustain this many wins in a row. And Dallas has already proved us wrong on a couple of occasions, I think. At least myself, I picked them to lose for no other reason than it's hard to stay winning. And so maybe this is the week that Kirk Cousins steps up and does it. And I figure that Washington is kind of like Detroit in this situation, where maybe they have a little less to lose, a little more confidence right now than they've had in the past. And maybe you just go into Dallas and air it out. What do you think?
No, I think that's what you do. I think Cousins has been tremendous. Ryan Kelly, he's not going to dazzle you, but he's going to get you 70 yards, which is sometimes all you need. He's going to close out games for you when it matters. And I think Jay Gruden, I think we have to agree he's the best offensive genius in the NFL because he made Andy Dalton look like a superstar.
Yeah.
And now he's doing it with Cousins.
Yeah. Proof is in the pudding. And on Thanksgiving, there's usually some, well, actually, I don't know about that. Do you have any pudding type dishes at your Thanksgiving?
We don't do pudding.
Yeah, neither do we. I don't. So you can strike that last quote from the record. But the point is, Jay Gruden is in fact establishing himself as somewhat of a guru. And maybe this would be a signature victory, I think, to knock Dallas off. And think of what that would set up within the division, with the Giants most likely moving to 8-3 as they play Cleveland this week. I mean, we're looking at a tight division that could literally come down to the final week of the year.
Yeah. So I think that's going to be interesting looking at. So like I said, Redskins could throw a big wrench into everything, or we can kind of watch Dallas keep coasting. So this is a pretty big game for Dallas because they win here. They're really in the driver's seat at that point. But we'll kind of see what's going to happen.
If they win this one, I'm going to have a tough time no matter who they play. I mean, at some point, I'm just going to have to give myself up to the Dallas Cowboys and say, take it all the way to the playoffs, my friends, and then we'll see what you do there.
All right. Another interesting game is Pittsburgh going to Indy. Pittsburgh's coming in at a 9-point favorite. That feels like too much. Pittsburgh hasn't been playing good ball. They beat Cleveland, but they're only beating them 6-0 at halftime. So I know it was windy and it kind of throws things off, and Bell did have a great game, but Pittsburgh's, they're good, but they're not that good. They just have a really good offense, I think, at this point.
Yeah.
And Indy, big win versus a red hot Titans team last week. So.
Well, yeah, they shut the Mariota Nation, which you and I are card carrying members of. They shut us up for 1 week. And although Marcus did try. He did try.
He had a great – I mean, I think a lot of that was like guys like Delaney Walker and some other guys fumbled in the red zone.
Yeah.
Mariota had a 2-touchdown day, didn't throw any picks. Can't really ask more.
You can't. It's on the supporting cast this time around. But your point is well taken that the Colts did what they needed to do. And as a result, I mean, 9 points, I would say if you're going to favor the Steelers, I would think it'd be like by 2.5 or something along those lines. I'm not a believer in the slightest. They did beat Cleveland, but who isn't doing that right now? And as you said, it wasn't impressive early. It was only as things broke down later. So, I mean, it's kind of the perfect game to have in this time slot because, I mean, what is that your time? That game's coming on at probably 8 or 8:30. I mean,
8:30 is perfect to be on at the bar where you look up and you're like, oh, Le'Veon Bell just ran 40 yards, or look at that replay of what Brown just did.
I think that's the trick. I mean, this is the guide for the Power Hour listener right now. If you want to do it right, you channel your viewing intensity into the earlier games. You peak obviously with Dallas and Washington, and that's when you really start gearing up your food intake as well at the same time. So you're going to reach that moment of just pure bliss where you're hopefully overloaded with football and food and beverage, and then you come crashing down later on with the Steelers and the Colts. I don't think it could end in a better way.
No, but I mean, a really good primetime game, though, because these are two well-known NFL teams. The Colts, even when they had Manning, I was never super excited to watch the Colts. I don't know what it is about it. It's just the city, the uniforms, just who cares.
But, yeah, white and blue with an emphasis on the white a lot of the time, and that horseshoe logo. I mean, it's just not going to... just doesn't get your taste buds going at all. No. But I agree, now they're a little more interesting, if nothing else, with different pieces and parts.
Especially with Houston losing. So we get back to this game. Pittsburgh needs to win. Baltimore lost last week. They got to keep that going. If you're Pittsburgh, you got to keep winning. The Colts have to win. Houston lost on Monday, so the Colts want to get another win here. It's going to be closer than 8 points. I think Pittsburgh probably pulls it off. But I just take the Colts and the points here. I don't know who's going to win.
A little parlay action for you. I'm going to need some statistics, though. First half of this piece, I'm going to go with the Colts to flat out win it outright, mm-hmm. and win it by 7. Now, can you tell me what the spread is for Cincinnati at Baltimore this weekend on CBS?
That's going to be Baltimore is a 4.5-point favorite.
There it is. I'm taking Baltimore by 14 over the Bengals. Mark me down for the Colts, and that shifts the balance of power in the AFC North. What do you think of that?
Ooh, I'm going to stick with the Steelers winning here. I think Roethlisberger makes a play, but this is going to be a shootout. I think I'm looking at the over-under here, about 47. Mm. I'm taking the over. This is an over situation, I think.
Yeah, and that would
in
be
a dome,
for,
weather doesn't matter. Yeah.
Good call. Good call. We may not think this way if it's at Pittsburgh, but since it's in Indy, in the dome, that would be the perfect way to top it all off.
And Roethlisberger has struggled on the road, though, mind you. But yeah. I'm not sure going to a dome really matters.
Well, I hope it does. And I hope he gets hurt, because I think we all know why. The real answer that will then step in and we can have ourselves a proper shootout, Landry Jones versus Andrew.
I think that's what America wants.
It's what it needs.
So, but that's Thanksgiving Day. Before we jump to the rest of the week, because it is going to be a fun week in the NFL, any Thanksgiving football memories?
As we spoke about off air, I was trying to think of something that really jumped out. I mean, more recently, the Seahawks have been playing on Thanksgiving, playing against the 49ers. And so that's been fun, because we've been winning those games quite convincingly sometimes. But I don't feel like that. I feel like you have to go back to the 90s to really get into what I was watching. I mean, I remember the Leon Lett moment where in the against the Cowboys Dolphins, Leon Lett comes sliding in to try and grab a ball that just should have been left alone, makes it a live ball. Miami recovers, wins the game.
Leon Lett, that was my pick too, and he's one of my favorite players ever in the NFL, because he was like the quintessential like 90s poster child for like why your uncle was pretty racist against like NFL players. Because this was a guy who in the Super Bowl in a blowout started like, you know, strutting into the end zone, and like the plucky little white underdog guy, you know, strips the ball from him. And then you get this from Leon Lett, just class act. And was he the cowboy who got busted with like a trash bag full of marijuana in his car?
Oh, I think it was. I think it was him. Yeah.
So you gotta love Leon Lett.
You mentioned the white guy who stripped the ball from him. Do you happen to? I know exactly who that was.
I want to say his name's like Scott Thurman, but that's probably like not right.
No, it's not. That sounds like either sounds like an Arkansas shooting guard or some sort of civil rights activist, but
or a House of Reps guy from Arkansas, like one of those white Republicans you never hear about.
Scott, vote Scott Thurman, 2016. Yeah. No, it was Don Beattie.
Ah.
Yeah. Collective silence from the entire audience right there. But I remember that one well. As far as any other, I mean, I remember the coin toss that was on Thanksgiving, the one that Jerome Bettis called or didn't call. I'm still not exactly sure what happened.
No,
there's some miscommunication
there. And if there's any league that could fuck up a coin toss, it's the NFL. I can't think of any other situation where a coin toss gets fucked up. But the NFL is like, God, you want us to fuck something up? We'll do it. That's what the NFL's now.
It seems impossible, but that's what the NFL does. They make the impossible possible, we saw it.
Them in baseball. Yeah, just competing.
Yeah, exactly.
Favorite Thanksgiving moment? It's not any particular. It's going to be the throwbacks that we don't really get as much anymore. Like, whether you have the Cowboys wearing, like, the, you know, the sleeve logos on their sleeves from the 90s or 70s or whatever.
Yeah.
Or Detroit not having a logo. That's what I miss. Bring back the throwbacks.
Exactly. A more subtle look. Less is more approach, and obviously when it does come around now and again, everybody loves it more often than not. So that's what I remember as well. To delve into your personal life, were you a guy that played in any Thanksgiving Day football games amongst either family or friends?
My immediate family, nuts. I had one cousin, and she was a girl who was into horses. So... not for me, but I will say twice when I played high school football, we played the state championship game after Thanksgiving and lost both times. Cause I'm a firm believer that, we missing that one, that week of school, like really messed up our heads.
Definitely.
And we lost. Well, yeah, so that's my Thanksgiving. A lot of failure on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I mean, that's most of our stories, I think, in one way or another. But, I mean, I think you're right. I think you knew even at the time that you're trying to peak and play in a championship game. It's the Super Bowl issue. It's Eugene Robinson being arrested for soliciting a prostitute because he's got too much time. It's the night before the
Super Bowl. Well, because he had to do something with his Walter Payton Award.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right. That sportsman
people
that
forget
he is.
That he won the... Sports.
Oh, yeah.
But no, you know what? Okay, but you say football. You know what? My favorite football memory? Helping my dad pick the games for that day.
Oh.
Before he gambled. Yeah.
Yeah.
Little clean Christian family fun right there. But yeah, because always like, Dad, the Lions, they're going to beat the spread today. And they'd always get blown out. And my dad would just look at me like I was the worst kid in the world.
Yeah. That's a look we've all seen from time to time. I do think that I can recall, you could just count on it, and I always appreciated when back in my young days, I had to go and visit numerous spots. We'd go to two different stops on our Thanksgiving, and I could always count on both grandfathers. You could find them watching these games. So that was always nice. Again, if you can't find the local pets, you can't watch the games by yourself, then at least maybe you have a grandfather or somebody else.
And that reminds me on a personal note, I think this will be my first Thanksgiving without my, what I call like my sports grandfather.
Yeah.
Because he was the grandfather who was more into sport. So I think in his memory, I'm going to start a stupid argument about sports with somebody.
Just I think like you have to. Do. Yeah. There's no better way to do it. We all have, it's funny how that works out because I had the sports grandfather as well. I had the sports grandfather and then I had the military grandfather.
Me too. But he wasn't in the military. He just worked for the Air Force Base. Knew a lot about airplanes.
That counts. But I think you would agree with me that one was a little bit better of a conversation than the other.
Yeah. One I would trust more in like a dangerous situation. The other one I would rather get drunk with than argue. Yeah.
Well, I think, like you said, you keep that tradition going, and I don't know which family member is going to feel your wrath, but they're going to feel it.
Yeah. Well, there's only like one left that watches sports, so my dad's going to hear it.
Yeah. So that should that's be the fun. Way it goes. Yep, that's what you have to do.
But let's move on to next week, Wes.
Yes, sir.
All right. And we're going to, I do want to talk about the Monday night game, but let's talk about that when we get to Houston, because I think we're both kind of shocked about the quality of that game. But let's start off Sunday. And let's talk about the Monday night game because it's the first on my list. San Diego going to Houston. San Diego, 1-point favorite. Houston coming off a loss, but their most entertaining game of the year. Never in primetime, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they still lost, so technically it was a Houston game in primetime, but you're right. You're right. We both have to eat a little crow here, especially myself, the guy who has rallied against Houston so hard, the guy who was hoping that if this wall does get built, that they'd build it before Houston could get back into the United States of America. That being said, they played a nice game. Brock Osweiler looked like a passable NFL quarterback. Not bad at all. And they almost
was it because of the altitude? You think?
Well, that's funny. I didn't think of it, but it could be. It could have helped him. I know he complained about the lasers from the crowd hitting him in the face and the eyes and messing up his game, obviously. I mean, I don't know about that one necessarily, but I'll go with your altitude theory as to why he succeeded.
Well, this brings me to like a recurring question here on the Power Hour. If the Houston Texans played on the moon, would Brock Osweiler be the best quarterback in the NFL? Because I think so, after playing so well at Mexico City, because this has high altitude. I'm pretty sure Mexico City's like right next to the moon, mm-hmm. the way some guys were talking about it. So Osweiler on the moon, MVP?
I like him on the moon a lot. I mean, he's tall, so I think, you know, he's probably the tallest player in the league at this point. And that's got to be worth something on the moon. I mean, none of us have been there, so we can't say.
I haven't, not yet. No, but, you know, the moon, that brings us back to Houston. Because Houston, do we have a problem? Because San Diego is a one-point favorite. I think Houston wins this game. I know San Diego is playing well, especially with the run game. But Houston looked pretty good, and that defense has been playing very well. Especially one Mr. Clowney. When he actually plays, he's pretty good, turns out.
I would just like to take a moment to fully appreciate that Houston, do we have a problem moon reference. I thought you were going to make a reference to the Houston Oilers and Warren Moon, who probably their best quarter, but you definitely went the better route. And I also agree with you. I feel like San Diego has kind of been holding on for dear life in some ways. Not that they're a bad team or anything like that, but it seems to me that the bottom is going to drop out at any moment now, and they're already in last place. So I'll take Houston. I'll take Houston comfortably.
Yeah. Next up, Tennessee going to Chicago. Tennessee, a 4.5-point favorite. Tennessee coming off the loss last week. I think they slaughtered Chicago. I mean, who's Chicago going to play at quarterback? One of these USC guys? I'm not even sure. Bradley. We'll just Bradley Cooper. That's what we'll call him. I don't know what it is.
Bradley Matt Cooper. Yes. Oh, yeah. Might as well be Bradley Cooper. Yeah. And you know how I feel. Cutler's out. I'm taking Tennessee by 25.
Yeah. No, I think and Chicago, he has no one to throw to because even Jeffrey and Miller are out for the year probably. So
it's a disaster.
Yeah. I like Tennessee there. All right. You picked Cincinnati, Baltimore. You took Baltimore -4.5. I like Baltimore also to win. I think they played pretty well against Dallas last week. They have some flaws, but Cincinnati sucks. They're done. Especially with AJ Green done. Let's look at one close to my heart. Arizona, Atlanta. Atlanta, four-point favorite. Atlanta hasn't beaten a bird team yet this year.
This is a piece of trivia you hit me with earlier, and it blew me away. It's the type of next-level thinking that you get only here on the Power Hour and on the NFL Roundup. I like the streak to end. I don't have any faith in Arizona to do anything anymore. And I know you could feel differently based on that stat you threw out there, but I'm going to go ahead and take Atlanta against the trend, and I'll take them by 14.
I like Atlanta to win, and I like Arizona skill players in fantasy this week. Fitzgerald, I'm playing, you know what? I might even play Michael Floyd this week and expect David Johnson to do very well also.
All right. Well, that's a lot.
But I like Atlanta by 2 touchdowns. Let's call it 35-21, something like
that. All right. I'm with you. 14. That's it.
Yeah. All right. All right. The New York football Giants travel to Cleveland as a touchdown favorite. If there's one team that loses to Cleveland this year, it's got to be the Giants, right? That would just make sense.
Yeah. Oh, no. No. It would make sense. I see where you're coming from. And this would totally just wipe out my dream scenario of all these NFC East teams being locked up or near that at the end of the year. A loss to Cleveland would do damage, although it wouldn't knock anybody out. And I see where you're kind of going because maybe
I think it would do a lot of damage to the psyche.
It does. It's a tough one to look past, but 5-game winning streak for the New York Giants, I think it moves to 6. As much as I'd like to see otherwise, I think I'll go.
I like New York to win here by a couple of touchdowns. But I'm not going to be shocked if Cleveland about that.
Okay. I'll sign off
on that. All right. Seattle traveling east, southeast to be exact, to Tampa Bay. Seattle, 5.5, 6-point favorite. Tampa Bay's looking good. They beat Kansas City, who doesn't really have the offense of Seattle, but probably is a better D at this point. I think that would be fair to say. But I'm not sure. You've got my boy Mike Evans, and can he tear up Seattle like Julio Jones did?
Yeah, the Lord and Savior himself, Mike Evans. I'll tell you what. To me, this is a sneaky, scary game. I think for the Seahawks. First of all, it's an odd afternoon game in Tampa for Seattle. Whenever Seattle goes east, it's usually an early 10 o'clock local time start, and that's not the case here. Now, do I think that's a bad thing? No, because I don't think they really like to play so today. But my point is this could be an odd one. I think that spread is actually pretty darn accurate, if I do say so myself. Seattle looking better and better each week, although they lose CJ Prosize just when the running game starts to get going, so we'll have to see how that affects them. I like a lot of Jimmy Graham in this game. You know, he's been used as a decoy a little bit here in the past couple of weeks after having a monster game. So I don't know. You know what? I think I'll take Seattle, but I think I'll take Seattle only to win this thing by a field goal. Maybe a late score by Tampa takes care of that spread. So
yeah, I think we'll see Tampa playing from behind this game, which means you might be closer. Like, it might be Seattle up 10 with 3 minutes left, and then Tampa throws a touchdown to make it within 3.
Yeah, yeah. Seattle,
I can see something like that. Yeah. I don't think Seattle's going to blow out Tampa Bay. I think Tampa Bay keeps it close. 5.5 is not that much. I'm going to play on the safe side. I'm going to take Seattle. Okay. -5.5.
Fair enough. I will just say that Seattle, you're right on the money. I don't see a blowout either. And Seattle is the type of team that, for instance, when they played the Jets, they let the Jets get a late score. I mean, they're not going to worry too much about that sort of thing. And so as a result, I could see Tampa putting one on the board and just breaking gamblers' hearts everywhere. So that's my pick.
All right. And then we got on Sunday night, we've got a major AFC West matchup. Kansas City traveling to Denver, where Denver's a 3.5-point favorite. And doesn't it kind of feel like Denver hasn't played in a couple of weeks?
It does. It seems like the last time
I know
time
they had
the
Saints win, but yeah. But
I don't even remember that. I mean, I remember their game against the Raiders on Sunday night, whenever that was. That's the last time we saw Denver. I mean, they've been kind of MIA. Now, granted, they had a buck.
And they beat New Orleans on a blocked extra point, which you think people would remember. But Denver's just kind of a forgettable team. Kansas City blows it versus Tampa Bay last week. I think Kansas City wins here.
Do you?
And based on the fact that I forgot about Denver being an NFL football.
Well, that does say something. What's the line on this again? You may have already said it.
Denver 3.5.
Oh, man. I'm going to go with Denver to take care of this, because that Kansas City loss was devastating. Just comical in some ways. So in Denver, I'll go with Denver. Now, I might think differently if this were being played at Arrowhead, but I'm going to go with the Broncos to reappear and win a game.
Yeah. And then Monday night, Aaron Rodgers, Mr. Scientology himself, travels to Philadelphia. Philadelphia, 3.5-point favorite. Green Bay's been looking bad. I don't know if you saw the story about Aaron Rodgers last week. Hasn't talked to his family in 2 years. Didn't attend his grandfather's funeral, who is very sports grandfather for Aaron, very close with him. Sent back Christmas gifts 2 months later that his parents sent. He sent them back in February. Canceled to be the best man at one of his best friend's weddings, like 2 days before the wedding. And his dad has to go to StubHub to buy tickets. Things are circling, and Jermichael Finley threw him under the bus in an interview. So, is the Rodgers train over?
It looks like it's not only over, but it's going to come to a crashing halt. I mean, this is frightening stuff. And do we put this on Olivia? I mean, is that what this comes down to, or is this go deeper than that?
Well, the two leading theories on Rodgers from people giving me hot takes. Scientology, because apparently Olivia Munn or whatever, might be into Scientology, or he's gay.
Well,
but I don't.
Okay.
That's the behavior of someone who's gay would just send back gifts. I don't.
So the latter theory is one that I have heard for several years as well, and I forget the last time I had heard he had shown up with a male friend to a Justin Timberlake concert, and that was just. That was concrete proof that the guy is in fact a homosexual. Now, I agree with you that the sending back gifts thing alone may not signal that he is gay. It could be a piece of the puzzle, but I'm more inclined to think that, I mean, this is extremely odd, and so Scientology lines up perfectly for me. I mean, all this points to a Philadelphia win, in my opinion, especially if they put Riley Cooper out there.
Yeah. but I mean, Carson Wentz, not a slave. He might be a Quaker. Not really sure what he does. I don't know what they do out there in the Dakotas. But yeah, the Rodgers story, this is going to be a 30 for 30 in like 10 years or whatever we're calling 30 for 30. This is an HBO Films doc, good 30 for 30 on Aaron Rodgers. That's what I'm excited about.
Yeah, me too. I mean, hopefully it ends in a non-violent way. Hopefully they don't come home to some sort of...
I kind of hope it ends in like a Waco situation.
Oh, like a David Koresh
style standoff? Like a shootout at the Rodgers compound. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, that would be more entertaining, I guess.
I don't know anybody. Like as long as... If it's just Aaron Rodgers who gets hurt, no one else, eh?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, like a week and a half solo standoff. I could get behind that if he's not taking anybody else with him. I mean, the guy irritates me for the most part. I wouldn't mind.
Well, get him off the fucking TV. I can tell you that much, and that's that's worth it. So
we'll see. I agree with you. I mean, that's where it all went south. Too much discount, double check. Too many commercials of that nature, and so as a result, we all hate him now, and we're reveling in his downfall. We just all we want are more details, and like you said, the Waco, Texas standoff with his death.
But back to the game. I like Philadelphia. Hard loss versus Seattle last week. Philadelphia is a good team. Mm-hmm. They don't have any wide receivers. But Green Bay's, they're awful. They're not a good team. They're poorly coached. There's no talent there besides at the quarterback position. Give me Philadelphia.
Yeah.
At home on a Monday night. That crowd's going to be energized.
I think so too. I think I like Green Bay to fall apart early in this one, continuing the downfall, and I'll take Philly big. I was impressed yet again with Philadelphia, a team who is not amongst the elite teams, but building in the right direction. So I like them next year a lot.
But if the Scientology god of what is it, Xanadu, comes down, give me the Packers.
yeah, exactly.
Xanadu. I think Xanadu is Olivia Newton-John's movie, but.
I think you're right about that, but if L. Ron Hubbard himself shows up, although I think he died a solid 30 years ago, but the point is that, if there's some shenanigans of that nature, then all bets are off, but we'll just assume not, and we'll go with the Eagles.
Well, I think Eagles win 2 years, Aaron Rodgers is in the Sea Org on some ship doing something.
All right, and we'll all be better for it. I mean, I can't go any better.
But before we have you go, Wes, we had on one Mr. Rob the Nerd to discuss the big game, Ohio State, Michigan. Mm. But out west, there is a game that rivals that. Little game where the winner gets an apple.
Yeah.
I think it's called the Apple Cup.
It is.
Washington State. This is the biggest one in recent memory, it feels like.
Yeah, it is. Both teams have something. Well, both teams have a division title to play for is what it comes down to. Obviously, Washington has their sights set on more. But hey, Wazoo hasn't won that title ever, so at least since they came up with it. And you're right, this doesn't happen that often. It's a huge game. It's in the middle of a Friday, which I don't really like that much, if I'm to be honest with you. But I don't know. I think the spread is something along the lines of 6 or somewhere around there. And I think it's a tight one. I mean, Washington has... the defense is playing well, but there are some injuries back there. As you know, the Cougars like to sling it around and get points, but they get scored on. And I think Colorado had about 600 total yards of offense as well. So I'm going with the Dogs, obviously, but I expect a good game.
Yeah. But could a little history, like what's kind of like a fun little side note? You can pick out one about the Apple Cup that like your common man who doesn't live up north would know about?
Well, I mean, in general, I mean, the thing about the Apple Cup is, and this may be something the common man does know, but in Pullman, what you want, and it can hurt your team, but you want the snow game. And they've only had a few legendary snow games, and honestly, Wazoo has typically won those games. You know, you think about Drew Bledsoe in 1992. You think about those types of, I mean, that's what it's all about. I hate to say it, but as far as other Apple Cup history, I mean, there's nothing. It's not really a big deal. It's not one of those things. It's a state where these things just kind of come and go, and then people get back to their art galleries and things along those lines. Yeah. So, I mean, it doesn't quite have the long-lasting impact of, say, an Iron Bowl victory. Speaking of which, I don't know how you feel about
it. I don't know. Is that game this week? I didn't know anything about it.
Yeah, I don't know. You may have talked about it a little bit. But
no, we may talk about it, yeah.
Yeah, I like the Dogs. And I hate, you know, with Rob, no disrespect to Rob, a great man, but I have to pull for Michigan in that one because it would actually help out the UW if they're going to make this playoff run. Maybe next year for Ohio State. They'll probably be back.
Well, there you go. But that's NFL Roundup. We'll be back next week to see, has Aaron Rodgers put himself in some kind of Waco situation? has Jay Cutler decided where he's going to go? And has James Winston done something dumb again? And how can we blame Cam Newton for racism? Find out next week on the NFL Roundup.
And Riley Cooper.
Riley Cooper. RIP Riley Cooper.
Yes, sir.
All right, we're back. So, yeah, lots of we're probably going to get sued by Aaron Rodgers is what you can take away from that roundup.
Sure.
But yeah, and some fun Apple Cup talk from Wes. We'll talk about the Apple Cup a little bit later. But, yeah, this weekend in college football – big rivalries. That's what this is about. You've got such battles, Auburn, Alabama. You've got the Apple Cup, Washington State. You've got the biggest battle of all, Texas A&M, LSU on Thanksgiving Day for some reason.
Well, because Texas and Texas A&M always used to play on Thanksgiving. Yeah. And LSU is now like second wife. That we're going to shove into the old... Like, well, this is the meal my first wife used to cook me, so you better learn it too.
Yeah. But there's another game.
Don't forget the Tobacco Cup. North Carolina State versus North Carolina.
You can't beat that game. It's going to be on Friday when everyone's shopping. But look, let's jump to Saturday. Saturday, the big game, Ohio State, Michigan. And Dan, what you decided to do for this podcast was bring in an expert. You may remember him from our Big Ten preview before we got on Half Guarded. You can go find it maybe on the SoundCloud page. But we brought in one Mr. Rob the Nerd.
At Rob the Nerd.
To help big Ohio State grad, Ohio State fan, expert on this rivalry. And he sat down with you for a little chat. So
yes, sir.
So you want to hype that up real quick before we jump to it?
It's a hell of a conversation. Rob is always extremely well informed about all things Big Ten, and it was a real treat having him on the show.
And just remember that Dan's not a very good host, and he forgets to cut people off. So this one does run a little bit, but it's awesome because Rob is a great interview, and honestly, you could do a whole 2 hours with Rob. So let's cut to that.
Thanks, Zach. And you know, for those of y'all who missed our pre-half-guarded episodes, what I like to call the glory years of this podcast, we had a guest on to talk about the Big Ten, the preview of the Big Ten this year, and it was the one and the only Rob the Nerd, at Rob the Nerd, and he is with us because of course he has to be with us. We're talking about the game, so we gotta get Rob the Nerd. Rob, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great, man. How's it going on your end?
You know, it's not as good as it was back when my beloved Minnesota Gophers had a shot at winning the Big Ten West, but I'll just have to settle for the biggest game of the year being this weekend.
You know, I will give you some credit. I think at the beginning when we actually did our preview, before we actually almost forgot about them entirely, I think I had them scheduled for maybe 4 wins, and they actually were apparently competitive, even though, as I told you previously before we even started this, I haven't had a conscious thought about Minnesota since we did that preview show. So the fact that, you know, I even went to your glorious co-host and asked him if he ever forgave me for bringing that up. He said that, you know, he did, but apparently you did not. But you actually set me straight beforehand and said, again, that they are your beloved Golden Gophers. So.
Oh, yeah. Go. That's their fight song, right? Sure.
Let's run with that. So,
if I say it is, you will argue with me.
So quick question before we get on to the game that actually matters here. I'm going to turn the tables and actually ask you a question. Minnesota and Wisconsin, who do you think is going to win that game?
Well, it's hard to bet against Wisconsin. Obviously, they're a very good team. They've you know, they've got probably the second or third best defense in the conference. I have to go with Wisconsin. I have to. But my heart's with the Minnesota.
Well, the ironic thing is that I know we're going to start talking about the game that matters here in a little bit, but my folks actually live up in Wisconsin, and my wife and I are getting ready to head up there for Thanksgiving, so we're going to have the nice little, you know, double appetizer of the game, and then, you know, with a little bit of Minnesota-Wisconsin on the side there, and I'm with you. I think Wisconsin is just... the running game's too good. Defense is too good. You know, their quarterback, you know, in the games that I've seen him, he's starting to develop. But again, young quarterback. You'll never know what can happen. Again, it's a rivalry game. They're fighting over an axe, I believe.
Okay. I forgot what they played for.
Yeah, I believe it is the Paul Bunyan axe.
Michigan and Michigan State play for a giant trophy of Paul Bunyan, right?
Sure.
Okay.
This is the one thing we talked about it the last time I was on, is that the Big Ten just have these weird trophy games that I'm sure actually mean things for the schools that have them. But you know, the one trophy game that we have is over a wooden turtle with Illinois, and we didn't even play them this year. So you can tell how important that is.
Oh, I hate that the Big Ten, the 14-team conference, broke up the Illibuck. I believe that's what it's called, the Illibuck?
Illibuck.
The Illibuck trophy?
Yeah, so.
If they switch that trophy to being a game between Illinois and Maryland, would anybody notice?
I don't know, maybe. I mean, maybe athletic director Gene Smith would not have a door stopper in his office. That's probably about the usefulness that they get out of that trophy over at OSU. Cold.
Ice cold. But speaking of ice cold, last weekend had a lot of snowy weather throughout the Big Ten. And, you know, as it regards the game, Michigan played Indiana, and they had a messy defense first game. You guys played Michigan State really close. Could you tell me what the hell happened there?
Jeez. I guess my only thought on it is Michigan State, as last year even showed, they always seem to find a way to play us tough, and that's honestly been more of a rivalry game, you know, than, you know, the game against the team up north here. In the last couple of years, you know, a couple of years ago, they kept us from getting into the, you know, national title game. Last year, they, you know, again, went through and put the dagger into our season. And you know, Mark D'Antonio, a former OSU defensive coordinator, he understands that when Ohio State comes in, it's a, you know, game that, you know, it's a marquee matchup. You circle that on the calendar.
Right.
I think with Michigan State, I actually thought that they were going to do a little bit more this year, and I'm not even sure why they necessarily collapsed as much as they did. I understand that they're young in a couple of different areas, but I thought the defense would be better coached. I thought the offense would you know, struggle at times, but I thought that they would be serviceable, you know. Then again, I thought the Big Ten was also going to be a little bit of a weaker conference than it's shown. I mean, right now you have four teams in the top 10. And definitely, if you had asked me that in the beginning of the season, I, you know, would have maybe said, okay, you have two, you have your OSU, and you, you know, obviously the, yeah, the rival to our school here. But I wasn't expecting, you know, definitely, you know, Wisconsin to be as solid as they were, and Penn State just, that surprised the hell out of me. But to kind of get out back to your original question, Michigan State always finds a way to play us close. It was the first real bad weather game that you faced all season. And the one thing, too, is that, you know, and this, I think, is not necessarily, you know, something that's focused on, given the, you know, kind of the storylines of the day, you know, kind of recapping. But the day prior, it was like 72, 73 in a lot of these places. I was walking around down here, and granted, you know, it's a state to the south. You know, but I was walking around in shorts and flip-flops, and then the next morning I wake up and my nuts are freezing off. It's like 40 degrees. It's like raining sideways. My dog saw snow for the first time and just did not want to go outside. It was a miserable day. And, you know, you got to think that going even further up north, it was just that much worse. You know, when the temperature swings 30 degrees like that, you're trying to catch a cold ball, and, you know, yeah, you probably haven't had that much experience with it. And even OSU, the past game has been just the most frustrating thing as a Buckeye fan this year. The defense has been solid. Mike Weber, you know, 1,000-yard rushing year. You can't ask for anything better out of a freshman, you know, tailback. Curtis Samuel, when they actually remember he's on the field and give him the damn ball and stuff, is a dynamic playmaker. But, you know, part of the thing that I think made that game even worse is, you know, they got away from, you know, giving Curtis Samuel the ball and stuff. I think he got only four touches, you know, out of the backfield, which is ridiculous if you ask me. You know, you got to find a way to get the ball to your most dynamic playmaker. And Urban Meyer, when he goes through and he finds himself in trouble, he has this bad tendency to just quarterbacker on it. And I honestly think that that might be part of the problem too, is just JT Barrett is just getting in car wrecks every week, and he's pretty durable. He hasn't had the Braxton Miller thing where he's been needed to cart it off the field like twice in the season. But, you know, still, that does go through, and that screws up with your timing, screws up with your rhythm. And honestly, you know, the dude's probably so damn sore and stuff, it's probably killing him to throw as much as he can into this. You know, OSU had a very early bye week, and I think that hasn't necessarily helped matters.
That makes sense.
You know, the team's a little banged up in some aspects, but... you know, that's the weird thing that with you come across with some of these divisional, you know, matchups and rivalries, where, again, they're in the East, we see them every year. You know, to a certain extent, you have to throw some of the records out. And you got to realize, too, that with Michigan State, this was their bowl game. They're not bowl right. eligible. They have a bunch of seniors on the team and stuff. You know, some of them, you know, remember going through and playing the Buckeyes close and being able to beat them, so they have that confidence. And really, you know, a lot of it too is that it was senior day up there, you know, home field, it's their season. You know, they were going to go through and they gave a good effort. And honestly, the conditions made it for what was a pretty favorable condition for them. You know, the conditions were ugly, you know. OSU couldn't complete passes to save their lives in the second half, you know, and they went through, they pulled out some trickery, you know, they had a fake punt that they went through and ran, and I was actually watching the game at my gym, and got a couple of dirty lurks because I went through and screamed an expletive pretty loudly inside of a pretty crowded Planet Fitness over here in my Columbus suburbs. But luckily, my membership is still intact, and I think part of it was that it was pretty much the reaction everybody at the Ellipticals was having that moment. So it definitely was an underwhelming performance, but if you kind of look around, a lot of the teams that went through and played in the Midwest that week had some underwhelming performances. Right. And that even carried over to the NFL games on Sunday, which I know, you know, isn't necessarily covered here, but
Zach covers that weird NFL. I'm not sure what that stands for, but that's Zach's beat.
I would say no fun league for last I counted, but it is what it is. But no, I think to a certain extent you have to go through and take what, you know, you can take some lessons from last week, but I think it's a little bit of an outlier.
Right.
But, you know, to a certain extent, I don't know necessarily what to expect out of this game. And I think that's what scares me, is that I don't necessarily know what either team is necessarily going to bring to this Saturday's matchup.
Yeah. And, you know, as a guy who sort of hitched my wagon to Michigan preseason, they've been the team I've been standing for all year so I can be right about something, damn it.
should have just picked Alabama.
Yeah, well, you don't get any credit for picking Alabama. You gotta pick, if you pick somebody who's not Alabama to win it and they actually look like, well, they could, you look like you're smart. If you pick Alabama, you just look like a coward. But I would say last week I found Michigan more concerning than Ohio State, and one of the reasons you pointed out was a big one is that Michigan State, you look at their season, they have been one of the worst teams in the country, except for four games. One of them is Rutgers, and everybody looks great against Rutgers. You, me, and nine of our buddies could get together, play Rutgers, and look like world beaters. That's, Rutgers is the cure for what ails you.
I would say, can you ship them up to, you know, up to the northeastern corner of the state and play the Browns? Could use one there.
If the Browns played Rutgers, it's Cumberland versus Georgia Tech. We go in 222-0. All right, that's what Rutgers will do for you. But the other three games Michigan State played well in are Notre Dame, Michigan, and Ohio State. That's not a coincidence. Like, D'Antonio will save his bullets for those games, even if it means you lose two or three games. That maybe if you won those, you could have been bowl eligible. He's going to save every trick for the big rivals and the big time game.
Now, quick question for you, since you kind of did bring it up, and it's definitely been a topic of discussion here. What do you think of D'Antonio going for two after getting the score that, you know, could have potentially tied it?
I mean, he has no quarterback. To me, that makes sense to go for the win, because that's the odds of them being able to drive back down and have another really good shot weren't so good, because he doesn't have a quarterback. So I think you try to go for the win when you can. And obviously there was still a lot of time left over, but a field goal loses the game anyway. So if Ohio State goes down and kicks a field goal, you lose to begin with. So I don't know.
Yeah, I think I tend to agree with you on that. I kind of can see it both ways. Considering the flow of the game, momentum was completely in Michigan State's, in their direction at that time. But the one thing that I think, you know, does go through is that the OSU defense, for the most part, did bend but not break too much in that game. And I think once you get to an overtime situation, you know, it's there are very few times when, when a game gets really nasty, Urban Meyer has this tendency to just find a way to win in an OT. Evidence of that with the Wisconsin game this year, and then, you know, Penn State a couple of years ago, the game that really kind of put JT Barrett on the map with the comeback from behind, on an injured leg and winning in a double OT over in Happy Valley. So I can see, okay, we can at least take it to OT and have a shot. But at that point, then you're giving OSU a shortened field. And,
yeah, I just think if you're a bad team in Michigan, I think that's part of the disconnect why people maybe criticize that is people can't get it through their head that Michigan State sucks this year, because they're used to seeing Michigan State be this really good team. This year's Michigan State team is just pickled ass. And if you're pickled ass and you're playing one of the best teams in the country and you got a shot to knock them out and take the lead with however many minutes left in the game, you take it, because you got to be super aggressive. You can't win by playing it safe. Only way you win is if you make some shit happen. As an old baseball friend of mine used to say, you just got to make some shit happen sometimes.
There you go. I need to go through. I need to find me a country store that sells pickled ass.
Look, I got it. I got jars. I'll mail it to you.
All right, I'll send it to you after. I'll send you the address after we're done here.
If I get your Secret Santa, I'm sending you the pickled ass in a jar.
Excellent.
But last week, the more concerning team to me was Michigan, and for a basic reason is that Wilton Spate got hurt. And in preseason, I was pretty confident that Jim Harbaugh would be able to take a quarterback and have a decent quarterback by the end of the year. And I feel like I was right. I feel like he took Wilton Spate and turned him into somebody. But Spate got hurt, and it doesn't look like he's going to play this week. And John O'Korn ain't worth a flying shit.
Yeah, that guy. Here's a thing that you have to realize with O'Korn is O'Korn transferred out of Houston, and I can't remember if he transferred before or after Herman announced that he was going to take that job. But you got to look
lost
at
the
what,
job before Herman.
Okay. But you got to go for it, and you have to look at it that, you know, because the point that I was going to make is that if he was worth anything, you know, with the rumors that you possibly have Herman coming in and stuff, and with his, you know, performance, especially dealing, you know, at the quarterback position and his knowledge of that, the fact that, it, you know, he just kind of looked at it and was like, okay, I'm not going to get my shot here. I'm going to go elsewhere. You know, and I mean, to Harbaugh's credit, he can go through and he can coach quarterbacks up. You know, I again, you could have asked me anything about either of the two quarterbacks before the season, and I could have given you very limited knowledge, but figured that out of one of them, Harbaugh would find somebody that would at least be decent. I mean, he took, you know, Jake Rudock, you know, and turned him into a decent quarterback. You know, and I mean, it's disappointing in the sense that, you know, when you have a game like this that means this much and has this much history, you kind of do want two quarterbacks and you just want both teams to be at their absolute utmost strength so that, you know, one, it makes for a better game, and two, you don't want, you know, you don't want the loser to be like, oh, well, we had our quarterback injured or anything like that. You know, I am kind of glad, though, because at least this way, at least this year, there's not a chance that there's the possibility that we lose to a quarterback whose name is Wilton. Like, okay, I'm a self-proclaimed nerd, and even I would kick a kid named Wilton's ass, all right?
I think what you mentioned about the Michigan Ohio State rivalry, it reminds me of the proprietor of MGO blog, Brian, who once said that the Ohio State Michigan rivalry, when it's over, there can be no solace. That's the thing about that game, is that when it's over, there is no, well, we could get them. No, it's just you have, you know, 12 months of being surly and upset, and then, well, and then praying to your demon gods for the strength to get revenge.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's at the athletic compound, there is a clock that counts down to when that game takes place. It resets as soon as it's over. You know, win or lose. You know, so I mean, there definitely is the importance that it's like, all right, this is the one chance that you got, which I think has made it kind of interesting to a certain extent that, you know, there's a lot of comparisons with this year's game being close to the 2006, you know, quote unquote game of the century, you know, because again, the teams are so highly ranked and, you know, to a certain extent, it's been a while since, you know, that team up north has been this good. Right. You know, especially leading into the actual game itself. So I definitely see where the comparisons are. But there was a lot of talk that year about possibly rematching the two in the national title game. And there was a lot of discussion here over whether or not that would be a good thing. Because, again, it's like, you know, okay, what other year would you go through and get the chance to kick their ass twice? But the downside is if you lose that game, how much more does that suck? You know, so it definitely is a double-edged sword, but I mean, I will say that I'm glad for, you know, the sake of my heart and my cardiologist that this game only comes once a year. Because I'm pretty sure that, the time, you know, I wake up Saturday morning, it's just going to be shots of booze until that game kicks off, and then win or lose, shots of booze afterwards.
I think we all kind of, as a collective college football fan base, dodged a bullet that Michigan was so shit in the era where they were in two different divisions. Because when the Big Ten first went to divisions, they wanted Michigan on one side and Ohio State on the other, hoping, ooh, maybe it'll work out where they'll rematch. And I think that would have been a horrible thing for everybody concerned.
There were a lot of problems with those first divisions. First of all, the names. Legends and leaders. Like, what kind of think tank thought that up? And at what point can we march them in front of a tank to run them over? So that, thankfully, you know, they actually went through and, you know, stronger heads prevailed. And now it's simply East and West is the way God intended. You know, and honestly, I like it this way. Now, granted, I don't think it's going to work out this year because of fucking Penn State. God, I'm so angry about that. But, you know, the way that I...
Well, and Michigan, like, laying that egg to Iowa fucked you, too.
Yeah.
That shit everything up, too.
But my point is that I do kind of like this because... The way that it's set up, it almost plays like a big de facto Big Ten East, you know, semifinal most years. Now, granted, you know, we went through and we lost to Penn State. I've, you know, vomited in my mouth several times. I got to watch their delusional fan base go through and be happy. And, you know, that's fine. You know, they can go through and, you know, have all their joy this season and everything. You still, you know, have a, you know, child rapists, you know, in your school's history as your, you know, one of your long tenured defensive coaches. And Joe Pod knew, okay? Anybody that tries to tell me that he didn't know and that, oh, you know, just let it go and stuff, whatever. You know, if you can't go for and you can't, you know, divorce yourself from that illusion and get to reality at some point, you know, at that point, I can't deal with it.
But here's the good part, is when Jim Franklin leaves this year to go take the LSU job. And then they have nothing again.
But do you think Franklin will end up taking that job, though?
I
haven't heard too many rumors. Now, granted, everybody right now is wanting to get on the Tom Herman, you know, sweepstakes, and I'm pretty sure he's going. Oh, I know that they're not going to go for and get him because I'm pretty sure he's dead set on getting that Texas job once they actually do get around to telling Charlie Strong that he's fired. You know, apparently he's the last one they haven't told yet.
That's how Texas knows their business.
Do you see Franklin going back to the SEC? And if so, I mean, who does Penn State then go through to get out? Or you know, if there's even that rumor, do you think Penn State backs up the Brinks truck to try to keep him there? Because I know that his seat was very hot, and they kind of exceeded expectations. You know, Barkley, the running back, definitely seems like to be a stud. But you know,
It turned out their backup quarterback was a hell of a lot better than that piece of shit we all told him was a piece of shit that they didn't believe.
Exactly.
Like, oh man, when we all tried to tell him Hackenberg wasn't any good, they went, "No, he's so good." And now they finally admit, "Oh yeah, he's not bad. He's really awful." Like we replaced him with some dude with no arm, and our offense is 20 times better, huh? I think there's a part of James Franklin that would very much, if he got an offer to leave for another high profile job and get the hell out of Happy Valley and all those assholes who wanted to fire him. You know, I think he would jump at it personally.
Yeah. So another question, since we're talking coaching carousel right now, and I know that we've been jumping all over the place and stuff. We'll get back to the game in a second here. But one of the rumors going around up here is that, you know, Purdue has a head coaching vacancy now.
Mm-hmm.
The hot name being bandied about is Les Miles. Your thoughts?
That would be a stupid hire. I mean, in general, I think you shouldn't hire an older coach who's maybe a little bit past his peak. because you're not going to be getting the Les Miles that won a national title. Like that Les Miles is gone. You'll be getting the guy who went 7-6 with LSU recruits. You really think he's going to do better with Purdue recruits? Especially when it comes to a guy like Les Miles, whose philosophy is so based around getting superior talent.
Exactly.
Okay, you're able to do that at LSU when the coaches who have had success at Purdue have been guys who've been good at taking whatever the hell you can find who's willing to commit to Purdue and fashioning that into something. That's not Les Miles. That's never been Les Miles. So
yeah, I tend to agree with you on most points, especially with the fact that Purdue, you know, the times that they had their greatest success was when they had a quarterback who was just slinging the rock everywhere. And Les Miles, I don't even think, knows what a quarterback is anymore. ever since, you know, DeMarcus Russell, like, I can't even name you a LSU quarterback. But I will say that for my own perverse enjoyment, I really wish that this hire does take place, because I enjoy crazy Les Miles and crazy Les Miles' press conferences. And with it being Thanksgiving, I just always think back to when they asked him about what his favorite meal, you know, favorite part of the Thanksgiving dinner was. And he went through this long, rambling answer about, you know, you take a little bit of this and, you know, a little bit of that cranberry sauce at the end. And boy, that turkey that you leave left over for, you know, the sandwiches the next day, those are delicious. And just this complete non sequitur, just completely rando answer. It's still not as great as the epic, you know, this is not St. Patrick's Day, that's a different day entirely rant, to which it's so famous even my wife knows it and laughs about it. As one of my buddy's favorite ones, is that it was the summer of FIFA, and when I think of, you know, Federation, I think of a guy with a gun. I'm gonna say, and if nobody knows what I'm talking about, just go through and just, you know, type in a like Les Miles press conference on YouTube. Get yourself lost down the rabbit hole and thank me later.
Oh, Les Miles is a treasure, and that's why his real true calling is to be on ESPN replacing Corso. That's where he belongs, so that we can get that every week.
That would be some entertainment right there. I'll give
you
that.
Most importantly, we won't have to watch his teams play football anymore. Because, oh, God. Oh, no.
I must say, those were a little bit of rough times. But, you know, and the funny thing is that, you know, now it's like you don't fear him because, again, like you said, he's probably past his prime. He's an older coach. He's like, what, 65, 66, somewhere around that range,
he's in that range. He's,
Yeah. And the rumor was is that, I think it was before Rich Rod took over, is that he was going to go through and coach the team up north. And, you know, that was at a time where, you know, that would have scared you, you know, to a certain extent. And now it's like, you know, God, I wish they would have.
Yeah. There's a reason he didn't get the Michigan job.
Yeah.
And just search into your Google, Les Miles, Gary Moeller wife, and have fun. Have fun with those message board posts.
Glorious.
But that brings us to the game, and what do we really think is going to happen? Who you got? How do you feel?
I will say that, you know, completely going through and taking off, you know, the Homer clothes and shedding the fact that I'm an alumni and everything like that. This is, I think, what as a casual viewer you would want. It's a game where any outcome, I think, is possible. I think no matter what, the game is going to be close because I think both coaches will play it that way. I think especially if OSU gets a lead, it's going to be very conservative from that point on. But then again, I had the same thought last year. You know, I actually had a lot of fear that we were going to find a way to lose that game, and instead it ended up being a 42-13 pounding. Now, granted, you know, part of that was because, you know, you just kept feeding Ezekiel Elliott the ball, and he literally looks just like an absolute beast in the pros right now, and I'm so glad that he was available in my fantasy football draft, because I am going through and skating to a 7-3 1 season right now. I tied in the first week, you know, go figure. I go through and I look at it this way, is that there are two major things, well, really three major things right now that are going through and are in the Buckeyes' favor. The first is home field advantage.
Big one.
Which is definitely big. That place is especially going to be rocking. And if you ever had your doubts on how many people can get drunk before noon on a Saturday, tune in to ABC because you will see about 105,000 of them packed in there. And like you said and mentioned earlier, I think number two, the big key is that you have John O'Korn. You don't have the standard quarterback in there. Now, there have been times where a replacement or a backup that we don't have a whole lot of film on has gone through and is given problems to OSU. But the one good thing is that this defense has been very, very solid all year. There really hasn't been any any games where they've been completely blown out. And even the game that they lost in Penn State won that on a just absolute asinine coaching decision on the fact of Urban Meyer not to call a timeout and to try to rush that field goal. I saw that was going to be blocked a mile away. Now, I wasn't expecting the run back and the score, but I was just frustrated as all hell that, you know, again, and this is going to be my third point and maybe not necessarily the best after I bring up the Penn State game, but you do have Urban Meyer's head coach, you know, one of, you know, the best, you know, college football coaches, you know, especially big game coaches, you know, probably in the last decade. Mm-hmm. Now, granted, you know, I did feel that, you know, there are times where he does get too conservative, gets a little outcoached, and especially in big games, I think he panics a little. But I do think that, you know, there have been close games. This team has seen adversity, and they have found ways to make adjustments. It hasn't always been pretty. It has often been very frustrating, and I'm pulling out what little hair I have left in some of these games. But with all the games, with all the shaky performances, they've still only lost one game this year. And while, you know, the team up north, they definitely have a much better coaching staff than they have had in previous years. You know, to me, Harbaugh is still somewhat unproven when it comes to, you know, he seems like to me, and again, this is going to be another terrible analogy concerning how this year went. He's almost kind of like the Chicago Cubs of coaches, to where he can have some success, but he always seems to find a way to choke away a game that would go through and give him a pathway to the ultimate success. Now, granted, as a Indians fan, I definitely was not necessarily a fan of how that went. And as I've been going through and joking, it's like, all right, we have, you know, first the Cubs, then this presidential election, and it was going to be that result regardless of which one of those two bozos got in. So it's like, I got the Cubs, I got, you know, El Presidente Trump, and it's like, if that team up north goes through and wins this game, I'm just probably going to start drinking arsenic. Now, the one thing that I do have is that miracle of all miracles, the hockey team in here has actually been incredibly surprising and has actually not sucked. So I, as a longtime suffering Columbus Blue Jackets fan, I actually have, you know, some joy in November. Like, it's Thanksgiving and the hockey season is not over yet. I don't know what to do. Like, I'm like that guy in that commercial. I don't know what to do with my hands, man. I'm just like, just beside myself. But I do go for it. I look at this that, you know, to me, this is a game that every single year, it doesn't matter the performances prior. It doesn't matter, you know, the records going into it. This is something to where you just kind of have to go into a clean slate because weird shit happens in this game all the time. The Luke Fickell year, that team had no business going through and giving them a game up in Ann Arbor, and, you know, they went through and fought tooth and nail the whole time, almost escaped with that game.
Mm.
And even a couple of years ago, one of the Brady Hoke years and stuff. Again, this is actually kind of ironic when I think about it, is that a team from that state goes for two to try to win the game, and it epically fails in their face on their home field.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, weird shit happens in this game
right.
all the time. And this is why it's such a beloved rivalry, is because really any year you're in it. It's one of the fun things as a outside observer, and as someone who is involved and froze your heart into it, it is one of the things that has you shitting your pants and nervous and just, you know, like, you know, literally, like, I don't think I've watched a game sober since I've hit, you know, like, 3 years prior to drinking age. You know, Mom, don't listen to this podcast, but
no, go ahead, I mean, Mama. Go ahead. No, this is a good right. podcast.
That's all right. Hey, I already asked her and stuff, and she said, don't worry, the cabinet is stocked for Saturday, so,
yeah. When Mama, you know, has to drink, you know it's a big day.
Well, you know, Mama's mostly a wine drinker, but she knows me, she knows my dad, she knows that we're basically, you know, three steps away from AA at times, so.
Mama's got to get the bourbon out for the game.
I will say, put some bullet on ice and let's go, let's do this, but.
Yeah.
No, it is one of these things to where I'm actually a little disappointed, because the game is here in Columbus, and, you know, I'm disappointed that I'm not going to be around it, because there is a specialness to being around, you know, campus and everything when game week is going on. You know, Sunday, as soon as, you know, basically it starts, you know, they go through, they tape over all the M's on campus in red tape. And when I say every M, like, if it's on a building, if it's on a billboard, you know, you just don't see the letter used for the most part within the next week. And just the sense that you get, that Christmas in the air, you're walking around. Now, it's a little bit different now that the game takes place during the week of Thanksgiving, because most of the students are gone. You know, going home or whatnot. But, you know, even up until this year, and I'm sure if anybody's watched it, the game on a regular basis, and especially when they're in Columbus, there'll be one part where they're cutting in and out of commercials and stuff, and they will show the Mirror Lake jump. Now, I don't know if I got into this the last time I was on with you guys, but I'll go through and touch on it briefly here, is the Mirror Lake jump was something that started, you know, a couple of decades ago, that basically it used to be the Thursday, and then when the game got moved to Thanksgiving week, it became the Tuesday, is that there is a little man-made lake on campus that's been there since, like, the early 1900s, Mirror Lake. It's a nice little, you know, area by some trees and a couple old buildings and stuff. And of course, you know, prior to the game week, it's November. It's normally like 20, 30 degrees at night. About 9, 10 o'clock, a bunch of drunk college students go free and start jumping in the lake because, as legend would have it, it awakens the dead spirit of Woody Hayes, who will go through and help us achieve victory. Again, this is shit that you only get with, like, sports and religion, you know? It's this weird shit that goes on. But if you have never gone through and have seen it, just type into YouTube Mirror Lake jump. Doesn't matter the year. I would suggest 2006, because that was probably the biggest one that they ever did. I was actually at that one. One of the three times I went through and jumped into the lake, Or no, four, excuse me. Three were voluntary, one was not. I was going through a buddy of mine, he was graduating his senior year. I went to go take a picture and some asshole shoved me into the lake.
Sure.
And completely ruined my phone, so fuck you, random dude. you owe me a flip phone from Verizon from like 2008, so yeah. But it is a scene that is just absolute chaos, you know, and unfortunately the rumor is that they're stopping the tradition because unfortunately a kid did pass away last year.
Oh, Jesus.
Most of the time it is something that is monitored by police. They have EMTs and everything on there, but I'm not necessarily sure what ended up happening. In the early years, it was definitely a lot more debaucherous. They definitely were trying to go through and limit and cut back and everything. And, you know, they don't serve alcohol, but obviously students will go through and occasionally sneak shit in because, again, college students, you know.
Right.
And it wasn't even a particularly cold day last year. I just think, unfortunately, the kid... you know, I don't remember all the circumstances with it and stuff, but unfortunately I think he ended up going through and drowning. And it's not even a deep lake, but, obviously, you know, once they got word of that, the, you know, the new president, yeah. Michael Drake, went ahead and kind of put the kibosh on it, but
alcohol and swimming often doesn't work.
So. Yeah. And as much as you want to try to go for and police an event, you know, it definitely is kind of hard to maintain a crowd of that many, because I mean literally it would be thousands of people. You know, I remember, you know, in 2006, the year that I went, I mean you could barely go through and even get in. Now part of that was also because, I mean, you know, again, tons of people and alumni are coming over. At points, you know, people are bringing, you know, flat, you know, inflatable rafts, and one person actually went through and made a homemade boat to put into the lake that year. And it'll be the only time that I actually drop the name of the school up north in this, just for accuracy's sake. But inscribed on the side of this in spray paint was SS Fuck Michigan. So, you know. So Captain of the SS Fuck Michigan, I salute you, sir. I will buy you a drink when the next time you stop into port. So.
Oh, but
it's definitely a crazy thing, and you know, that is one of amongst many. I mean, I know that there are definitely more charitable things. They do food drives, you know, in you know, kind of competition. They do a big blood drive. And the one thing that I'm actually very sad about, and this is probably going to be a little bit more familiar to, again, some people as well, is that every time there's the OSU home game against the team up north, is that they do have the Hate Michigan rally with the Dead Shembecklers, the only punk rock band dedicated to Wolverine hate core music, as sure. They call it. And to their credit, they're actually decent musicians. They actually are. It's one guy is a lead singer, and he does like radio work, and then, you know, his backup band was an actual band from Columbus back in the day. And they all dress up like, you know, like they're the bastard sons of Woody Hayes. And
they probably,
you know,
are.
And go through and sing, you know, such great classics like, you know, Chad Henne is a motherfucking joke.
They're not wrong.
Oh, no, they're not wrong. And obviously, you know, we don't give a damn for the state of Michigan. Michigan Stadium is a pile of shit. I wipe my ass with Wolverine fur. Download the album on iTunes, folks. Give them a couple of bucks. It's worth your time. But actually, the lead single that they came out with last year was Hardball to Hell, a somewhat homage and parody of the AC/DC, you know, Highway to Hell song. Obviously, sure. With lyrics about, you know, Hardball's man teeth. So,
sure. That's good. That's just good songwriting there.
Exactly. I mean, and the sad thing is, and they don't. This was actually, I think you can find this on YouTube, but they haven't actually released it as a single. Was the one year that they came out with the song "Brady Hoke is a big fat fuck."
Again, no lie. I haven't heard a lie yet.
I'm gonna
this
say,
has
I mean,
all
it's
been true.
I'm going to say, it's no lie, but I mean, it definitely is a sight to behold. There are videos on YouTube. Some of them are actually ones that I've taken, and the band actually did go through and give me some free merch for it. So, you know, good guys in that atmosphere, too. So.
Sure. You touched on it there, is that my favorite thing about this game is how mystical it gets. Like, you guys dive into the healing waters of a lake to revive the spirit of Woody Hayes. And then Michigan fans, I'm not sure which one's weirder. Y'all, like, summoning up an angry lake god, or Michigan fans doing what they call a grave walk to Bo Schembechler's tomb to Buckeye nuts and pray for his vengeful spirit.
I want to touch on this real quick and stuff. Now, granted, you know, Woody Hayes may be the Leviathan. I'm not quite sure. But that was the one thing that I did find very odd and stuff, is that nobody, you know, had the comment except for me and maybe a few others, is did anybody find it ironic that Hardball busted a nut on Schembechler's grave? Like, that sounds like something that we would do.
Jesus. See, when you put it that way, it sounds different.
Exactly. I mean,
especially when you say, well, what he actually did is he took a sledgehammer and hit a Buckeye nut with it. That don't sound like a thing.
Exactly.
So when you put it that the other way, sound that sounds
exactly
at least more normal.
When you go through and you phrase it as you would as an opponent of that team in the rivalry, you know, it definitely sounds much worse.
Sure. But I don't know. Maybe that's part of the incantation. Like, look. We're playing with some serious necromancy here. Oh, hi! If dark demons rise up out of the heavens, or rise up out of the ground, and start consuming us all, it's probably going to be related to something an Ohio State or Michigan fan did to win that game.
Well, I guess the only thing that I could go through and say is that, you know, all you Southern boys down in the Bible Belt better, you know, do some holy roller shit for the Iron Bowl to counteract all that. So,
yep.
So real quick, I'll go through and I'll touch up on this. Obviously, I don't think it will really matter because I think Alabama gets in regardless, unless they just have an absolute epic collapse in two games.
Right.
But what are your feelings on the Iron Bowl this year?
Count me in the Alabama skeptic. I just think the SEC's kind of collapsed, and it's masking the fact that team isn't maybe as unbeatable as we think they are. I really don't think their quarterback is all that good. And Ole Miss shredded their defense, and they're Ole Miss. They got seven losses.
Yeah.
So it's like, I don't really want to hear about how great Alabama's defense is when have they played the teams Michigan and Ohio State have played? No. Have they played the teams Washington has even played? I'm not even sure. So I don't think there's any way where Alabama blows this, because they're going to get to play Auburn and Florida.
Yeah. And at the very least, they beat Florida. I can see maybe Auburn, just because it's a rivalry game.
Right.
But I really don't think Alabama is going to get challenged until they get into the playoff. And then I think all bets are off. And I think that is when you're going to really see what this team is made of. Because I think Alabama did get lucky to a certain extent that they started off with a USC team that was still trying to find itself.
Right.
And Washington definitely learned they may be a team that's starting to find themselves a little bit.
Yeah. I think that's not a fair. I think you're exactly right. It's not a fair comparison comparing the USC team Alabama played versus the one Washington played.
Exactly.
So what are your thoughts on this? Cause this is a hot button topic. Let's say Ohio State beats Michigan. I know I'm knocking on wood. I don't want to jinx you. I don't want to screw that up.
No, fair enough. I know where this was going. So
let's say Ohio State does win. What are your feelings on the playoff? Do you think you get in?
I would say that the way that I'm looking at it right now is that if you had to put a gun to my head and pick the four that get in, I think Alabama at this point is a lock, and I think they're the only team that is a guaranteed lock right now. I feel that if Clemson wins the ACC, I think they get in, but I'm not 100% sure on that. I feel somewhat safe going through and suggesting that, but I'm not quite sure. The weird thing is that because the Big Ten has been so strong consistently, I see where this has just become an absolute giant jumble of a mess. I do think that the winner of the game likely does get in and is the third seed. Okay. If Washington looks really great the rest of the way, which is not necessarily a given, I think they have a shot at maybe going through and, going through and in dispelling that and maybe sneaking in as a four. But the weird thing is I think it really is going to depend on how all four Big Ten teams that are right now in the discussion look. If Penn State goes through and just absolutely massacres Michigan State and then just slaughters Wisconsin like 59-0 like we did a couple of years ago, I can go through and I can see maybe the argument for them going through and getting in. And quite frankly, I wouldn't necessarily have a problem with that despite my rant on them earlier because, again, they won a tough conference this year.
Right.
But I also wouldn't be upset if they go through with whoever wins that title game, either, Penn State or Wisconsin, as it looks like right now, and the winner of the game. I think that, the Pac-12 is down, the ACC is down, not too many other teams have looked.
The ACC's not, I wouldn't go there with you.
Well,
ACC, I would say, has been the second best conference in the country this year, sir.
I think I would tend to agree with you now that I'm kind of going through and giving a little bit of extra thought to it. Just because I do think that, they have had some solid performances. I think the thing that gets me down in the ACC a little bit is that in some of the bigger games, that they've had, I haven't necessarily been as impressed with some of the top teams' performances. Clemson has been winning a lot of really close games. Louisville looked like they were going to be really great and stuff, and then I was shocked how badly Houston took it to them. Yeah, I figured it'd be a close game, but I didn't expect that was definitely a curveball. I guess I can go through and say that I think part of my assessment with the ACC being down is I thought that, Florida State would be a little bit stronger. I thought North Carolina would look a little bit better in some games than they have.
Carolina blew it with the Duke game. Like, Carolina was all set up to win the ACC Coastal, and then they blew it to Duke, and that just...
Yeah.
Now they're sitting here waiting on Virginia.
I think the ACC does have some good teams within it. But I just think that overall the performances maybe have not striked me as much as my expectations.
Right.
I guess maybe that's where it is. I expected a little bit more from the ACC and some of the performances there. Maybe I just personally feel a little bit left down, but I definitely can agree with that. I think that if Clemson definitely wins, they're deserving to get in.
Right. I think sort of the difference between them and the Big Ten is that the Big Ten, the top of that conference, is amazing. Because, Michigan, Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, and Wisconsin, there is no conference that has anything close to having that kind of top end.
Yeah.
Like, there's nobody even close. But then the ACC, I think if you go, 1-9 or 1-10, I don't think anybody's got that good a 1-10.
Especially because you got to figure in and stuff. You got teams in the Big Ten like Maryland and Illinois and Rutgers.
Rutgers is going to drag down any average.
Exactly.
And Purdue and,
To circle around, I guess, to your question and stuff, if you had to go through, I think right now you're looking at Alabama, Clemson, the winner of the game and the winner of the Big Ten. And I think the only team that really has a shot at this point of going through and disrupting that is Washington if they look really impressive the rest of the way.
See, I think Ohio State's kind of on the outside hoping for some luck. Because I just don't believe the committee is going to ever leave out a one-loss conference champion.
Yeah.
For a non-conference champion. Obviously, the thing helping Ohio State is that Washington has struggled at times. I mean, obviously they lost to USC, who's like a four-loss team, and they almost got beat by Arizona, who's probably the worst team in the Pac-12. So they could easily lose to Washington State. And if they lose to Washington State, I would say go ahead and put Ohio State into the thing if they beat Michigan. If Clemson, you know, loses the ACC championship game, or, you know, hey, Clemson's got a rivalry game this weekend against South Carolina. Throw out those record books. You know, that's one of those games as well. I mean, I know you're laughing, but, you know, Clemson, South Carolina.
Yeah, no, you're truly right. And, I mean, that's one of the great things about this week is that so many of these games are just, you know, pick 'em, you know.
Right.
It should be for some good viewing entertainment.
So if Clemson drops a game, all of a sudden now Ohio State's, you know, sitting pretty as long as they beat Michigan. Because I don't see a two-loss conference champion getting in over an at-large Ohio State.
Yeah,
because Ohio State's look too good to get left out for a two-loss team.
Well, but, I guess here's
the
two-loss question,
team that's not a two-loss team that's not the Big Ten champion.
Okay, that I was going to be Ten my champion, question.
The Big Ten champion's getting in. I think no matter who wins it, if it's Wisconsin, if it's Penn State, if it's Michigan, it doesn't matter. That Big Ten champion is getting in.
Well, it's definitely going to be interesting to watch how it all unfolds. I'll give you that. So.
And I think one of the keys to it is not just that it's been the best conference this year. It's that all four of the teams in the running are all major brands. And the conspiracy theorist in me thinks that's going to end up mattering. Because even if Penn State wins it, and yeah, they got two losses, they're Penn State, right? They're not, it's not like it's Maryland. If you swapped out Penn State for Maryland, I would have a very different opinion. Or if you swapped out Northwestern for Wisconsin, my opinion changes.
Now, what if we swap one of them for Minnesota?
If we swap out one of them for Minnesota, then get them, boys! Gophers for life! We got this! and that may be where we need to end this thing and throw it back to Zach.
Well, actually, real quick, do you want to do a prediction for the game?
Okay, for the game, prediction. I think I'm looking at the weather report because that's very important for the game. Seems like it's going to be in the 40s, clear with slight wind. I think that favors Ohio State. If there's a sudden weather change, I want to go ahead and be on the record. If the weather suddenly changes and it becomes messy, I switch my pick to Michigan. But as of today, based on the weather report that I have seen, this is going to be a clear day. I think that's going to be the little bit of help Ohio State needs. I do think Michigan has the number one defense in the country. I do think y'all would have been in trouble with Spate playing. But with John O'Korn, brother, if you didn't see last week's game, go back and watch a montage of John O'Korn playing quarterback like he's a Madden player.
Unfortunately, I did subject myself to that. So.
But John O'Korn literally played quarterback like a Madden kid, and he would just hike the ball and run 20 yards backwards. So you do that against Ohio State, you're going to have like three or four interceptions, and you're going to get sacked for like 20 yards a pop. I don't think Michigan can beat Ohio State with O'Korn playing that way unless JT Barrett has one of those JT Barrett games. If JT Barrett plays like bad JT Barrett and they cancel each other out, I think Michigan I think Michigan's overall team is better if you take out the quarterback position. But with quarterback position, if JT Barrett plays anything close to what he's capable of and O'Korn is so bad, you got to give it to Ohio State.
But again, I will go for and I will say this, is that I agree with probably about 90% of your assessment there. They definitely have a very good defense. I think their quarterback play is definitely, very concerning. But it's one of these things, and I'm not sure why, but I do have a quiet confidence about this. I think that the first half of this game is ridiculously close. I honestly expect it to be about tied, or even with, you know, the team up north going through and having a slight lead into the half. But there's just something about this team that, you know, for the most part, they do find their way to go through and to claw back through things. The coaching staff does respond well to adversity. I do have a little bit of concern with the weather, but I think if the weather is clear, I think that, again, does favor Ohio State. I am going to go through and lean 33-27 Ohio State. I think it's going to be very close throughout. I think somehow in the fourth quarter, Buckeyes will go for it and get it done. The big key to me is if they get Curtis Samuel involved early and often, because he is a dynamic playmaker. I'm really fascinated to see how well he matches up with Peppers, because I think that is just going to be two freak athletes colliding, you know, midfield a couple of times during this game, and that's definitely going to be interesting to watch. The Ohio State defense does have its tendency to sometimes bend, but for the most part, they have gone and have done really good job at going through and keeping offenses in check. You know, even with some of the running that LJ Scott went through and got on them early in the last game. And really, with Michigan State, there was like maybe four real big plays that really, you know, determined, you know, some of the momentum swings in that play and really made that game probably closer than it actually looks on paper. But it definitely, I think, is going to be what most people are going to think about when they think of this game. It is going to be tough defenses, power offenses, just good old-fashioned cold weather, Big Ten smash-mouth football, and I can't wait.
I will tell you this. If those two teams end up combining for that many points, I will shit 12 bricks. Because this game, to me, feels like it's going to be 3-3 at the half, and somewhere at the end of the third quarter, Ohio State's going to finally score that touchdown, and Michigan's going to sag a little bit. This feels like Woody and Bo, and it's going to be 10-3 is going to win this game. That's my prediction.
I could see it going either way. I mean, and quite frankly, I don't care if it's 2-0. I don't care if it's 1-0. Just find a way to somehow, you know, soccer kick one in. You know, I will take a victory by any margin over them bastards up north, because I don't give a damn for the whole state of Michigan.
Oh, and on that note, well, I keep forgetting. Do you want to give, you plugged something on our first episode. It's one of my favorite things, and I definitely want to hear you plug that thing again.
Okay, I will go for it, and I will plug this again. One of the things that I'm involved with is a group here in Columbus known as the Artist Wrestling League. You can find us on Facebook, Artist Wrestling League. Just search it in. I think it's actually facebook.com/Artist Wrestling League. It is a competitive art league, for lack of a better term. Local artists portray certain wrestlers. You know, we go through, we take audience suggestions, have 7 minutes to go through and paint whatever you, the audience, go through and suggest. And we have had some of the craziest things that have gone through and have been suggested. Anything from musical penises to hamburgers as friends. And thankfully, we have very good, talented artists that can actually somehow find a way to paint this shit. And not only paint it, but paint it somewhat well within, you know, the 7 minute time frame. In between, we also have had a lot of musical acts go through and perform at some of our festival shows. We had a band called Mumula that is a kind of, you know, surf punk rock band who all dress up like vampire mummies, and they are fantastic. Bandcamp.com/Mumula. So if you want to go through and check them out, they got some really groovy tunes, and their new album actually came out, and definitely worth the money that they're asking for it. But it is really just kind of a circus sideshow of, you know, a lot of really creative aspects of it. I am, you know, more or less just the manager and mouthpiece for one of the wrestlers. If you do go on to the Facebook page, you'll get to go through and see a couple of those. One of them, I smash a giant pot over somebody's head while talking in a horrible Spanish accent the whole time. So it's fun for the whole family, for the most part. You know, pay no mind to the musical penis
line that I went through. Well, maybe leave grandma at home that day.
The funny thing about that one was that was actually for one of the arts festivals that they had in the Franklinton Arts District. And that got suggested. We didn't see any kids in the audience, so they decided to fly with it. And then, of course, two kids that always show up. We've nicknamed them the Comic Twins, and they're kind of our unofficial tag team. They're these two kids that are just super fans, and they're just great. They come to pretty much every event. And, of course, they show up at that moment. Their mom got a good laugh out of it. But, you know, really, it is... for the most part, pretty fan-friendly. If you do go on the website, we do go through and list our events when they do come up. Right now, we're taking a little bit of a lull to kind of go through, you know, for the winter. Festival season's kind of died down a little bit. We are going through and working on a lot of video projects right now. One of them that should be upcoming is actually something that we shot a while back ago, where I, Mr. Muerte, go through and try to teach my partner, my client, El Diablo Blanco, try to get him into good workout shape for his upcoming matches. And sure. He showed up dressed in a devil mask, giant horns, wearing a outfit that looked like he was an extra in a Richard Simmons video from the 1980s.
Good.
So if any of you remember that old, like, Hulk Hogan, you know, like, you know, Mean Gene, you know, training bit, this is kind of like this, except even weirder.
I'm so glad you plugged that again. This is literally my favorite thing. I found out about it the first time you were on our show. And I love it. 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 Everybody involved, everybody who listens to the show, you should go check this out. It's the best thing in the world. So with that, obviously, I wish Ohio State luck because of you, sir. Even though it will make me look stupid, I will take that on. I will deal with that on your behalf for you. And so
I appreciate that, sir.
And so with that, take it away, Zach.
All right, we're back. So there you go. Crazy. Can't believe that Rob picked a tie to happen.
We were able to shoehorn in like my beloved Minnesota Golden Gophers into that
your bullet discussion. A team that's better than Auburn, apparently.
Well, so, they are like right there in the thick of things in the Big Ten West.
Well, so, you know what,
if like, you they might took, actually they have a shot to win their division, unlike
if you
some
took
people
all of Auburn versus all of Minnesota, I think we'd whip their ass. The
what
fan
base,
players, I think we went in a duel. To go back to what me and Wes talked in the roundup, there was a duel between those two teams. Give me Auburn.
I don't think you know what you're fucking with there. Like, I think you have severely underestimated what you're dealing with when you go fight Minnesota people. Have you? They're the White Walkers. You cannot beat them.
Forget a little thing called the Civil War, and Minnesota never beat Lower Alabama.
I think you maybe need to look up who won that war.
Did Minnesota ever beat anybody from Alabama? Was Minnesota even a state?
They may not have been a state.
Yeah, so good job, Minnesota. Way to help the U.S. win the Civil War. Good job, Minnesota.
I don't think anybody was living there at the time.
Oh, I'm sure some Indians were, and we took their land. So, and in the spirit of Thanksgiving and taking Native Americans' land, let's jump into some picks and let's kick off Thanksgiving Day. LSU, A&M, LSU 6.5-point favorite.
That seems high for a team that just got beat by Florida and couldn't score any points, didn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Like that, and they're on the road. Like that seems dumb. Well,
A&M still starting their other quarterback, I believe. I think the kid is out. Trevor Knight's out.
Yeah, I just don't know how LSU scores a lot of points against Texas.
No, I like the under here. The under is sitting at 46.5, 48.5. I don't think there would be a lot of points scored in this game.
I think Texas A&M wins this game straight up, and I think this line is stupid. So I'm taking Texas A&M.
Hard words.
And you know what? Lock it up. Play the horn. First pick.
Ooh.
Go ahead and play it.
Dun, 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 dun. I don't have the horn on me today.
Okay. I just think that's a really, really stupid line.
Yeah.
Like, what part of last week makes anybody think LSU should be favored on the road?
I think that line may have been swung by gamblers just picking LSU over it, be my guess. But speaking of stupid, Nebraska, Iowa. Iowa opening at a 3-point favorite.
Really? Okay, that game opened as a pick'em. So
yeah, it's moved to three now. Yeah, depends on who your guy is.
So that's interesting to me that Iowa's picking up people betting on them, because that seems like a pretty easy Nebraska win to me.
Yeah, like, I like Nebraska there.
I think we're all sort of like, Iowa just happened to be on the field when Michigan's offense exploded. Like, there's nothing about them that's any good. Michigan's offense just decided one week not to show up.
Well, people forget Iowa lost to an FCS. Iowa sucks. This is not your daddy's Iowa.
That's not fair. From last year. They lost to North Dakota State. Like, North Dakota State would win the SEC.
Oh, sure.
They've won five straight national championships.
And in cockball, not real big boy ball.
How many anythings has Tennessee won in the last decade?
They beat Florida this year. People forget
Boy! Woohoo! Let me take my pants off and helicopter my dick.
Excuse my language. Fuck that. If Tennessee's playing Chattanooga in the playoffs every year or whatever, they're going to win. Are you kidding me that Tennessee wouldn't crush? You're telling me Tennessee wouldn't win the FCS championship?
Nah, because they wouldn't beat North Dakota State. Like, North Dakota State would beat them by two touchdowns.
That is bullshit.
Yeah,
right there.
North Dakota State would be a borderline playoff team if any conference.
You see, kids,
like,
this is what happens when you read too much and you're looking at stats.
They're a top 30 team every year.
Top 30 playing nobody.
But no, they're top 30 with all of that taken into account.
Oh, I'm sure. Oh, yeah, with math and nerd
science. Yeah, with math. That little thing called math. The thing that the Arabs gave us.
No, you put Tennessee on the field with North Dakota State, they beat them 9 times out of 10.
No, they wouldn't.
And you know what? Coughlin,
they would lose. They would lose 4 out of 10.
Send us the money. Send us the money. The Power Hour Challenge Series. Tennessee, North Dakota.
Tennessee would never play them. Yeah. They would never schedule them.
Yeah, because they don't want to hurt their feelings.
Because they get their ass kicked.
That's ridiculous.
Like, North Dakota State would beat the shit out of Tennessee. Tennessee is a Charmin soft program. That is a team that folds at the slightest bit of adversity. That is a team with no quarterback, with no running backs, with no linemen. And you're going to play North Dakota State, the toughest team in America?
The toughest team in America?
North Dakota State is tough. They beat an FBS team literally every year. They haven't lost to an FBS team in like 5-6 seasons.
Well, you know what? But do they beat? No, they wouldn't beat anybody that Tennessee.
They
lost
beat
to.
Kansas State, and Kansas State's better
Kansas
than Tennessee.
Kansas State
would beat Tennessee by 3 touchdowns.
That's ridiculous.
Tennessee
That's
blows.
Dumb.
Like, you have got
Tennessee
to get
blows,
it.
But they're FCS. They're FBS.
They're not, but they're not. That's the thing about North Dakota State. The only reason they're still FCS is because they're in the middle of nowhere and there's no conference for them to join.
Listen, you know what? Western Michigan would beat North Dakota State.
No, they wouldn't. No, they wouldn't.
Yeah, they would.
Oh my God, no, they
wouldn't. They would. This is such a
There's not a single team on Western Michigan's schedule better than the teams North Dakota State's played and beaten this year.
Dan's the type of person that would argue like Alabama would beat Cleveland. Just total, just nonsense.
No.
You know what? I might have to find a new co-host for this show.
This has come up. The difference between the top of the FCS and the middle and bottom of the FBS, there is no difference. In fact, the top of the FCS is significantly better than the middle and bottom of the FBS.
That's.
Because, I mean, it's the basic math that some teams got to lose and some teams got to win. So if you're in the middle and the bottom of the FBS, you're a 6-win team at best. And you're getting your brains beat out most of the time. And it's harder for you to get players than it is for a team that basically what North Dakota State can do is go to every single kid who's maybe not good enough to go play for USC and he's maybe not good enough to go play for Nebraska. And go, well, you'll get to go win a championship, and all those kids go to them. And it's an easy-ass school to get into, so they don't have to worry about, can I stay eligible? And so North Dakota State just loads up on these kids, and they end up with a much better team than anybody in the Mountain West.
And that's why they produce so many pros besides Carson Wentz. right?
They got a number one overall pick. Tennessee has never had a number one overall pick.
Okay, but come on. Peyton Manning was number two. That was
Peyton Manning went number two.
But he should have gone number one. Everyone agreed that he was much better than Ryan.
Not at the time, they didn't. That's revisionist.
We'll see. But let's move on. the battle for Texas's soul. Texas Christian goes to Texas. Texas is a 3-point favorite. Does Charlie Strong win in his last game?
I hope he does, because Texas deserves to have this dumbassery blow up in their face. Like, yeah, I want Charlie Strong to win that game like 35-6, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh shit, can we fire him?
Yeah. I like Texas to win here, because anytime your coach is going to get fired or just got fired, the team usually wins the next week.
The problem is that this Texas team has absolutely no heart whatsoever. And they have played like shit at every opportunity to save his job. So I think they'll lose. But I want them to win, because if they win, there's a really good shot Texas plays Texas A&M in a bowl. Because the SEC can schedule that. Like, the SEC controls where if you don't make the top bowl for the SEC, then the SEC assigns who goes where. And they could easily send Texas A&M to go play Texas in a bowl game, and we could finally get that. And if Charlie Strong beats Texas A&M in a bowl game, holy shit, they might have to keep him.
Which would be awesome. The Tobacco Cup Bowl?
Have a name, I just gave it that.
Bowl. North Carolina State, North Carolina. UNC, 11.5-point favorite. I'm liking NC State here.
Nah, take Carolina.
I like NC State's a team that, like, they win sometimes when you don't think it's going to happen. I like NC State.
But they're going to get their ass beat.
No, we'll see.
They're going to get humiliated because, you know, there's a lot of rumors that the coaching staff is already bracing themselves to get fired, and that's always a rough thing. And Fedora has more or less beaten NC State's ass every year. I mean, Doran's only beaten him one time, and UNC's got a significantly better team.
All right, let's move on to the Apple Cup. The biggest Apple Cup of this decade.
Yes.
Washington, going to Washington State. Washington, a 6-point favorite. Got to be impressive to get into the playoffs here. Well, they've got to win next week, too.
I don't agree with that. If they just win these next two games, they're in.
Yeah. For sake of conversation, let's just say they have to be impressive, because it sounds more dramatic. Washington needs to go in. Washington State really wants to get the win here, though. But UW knows how big this game is, too. This is probably my second biggest game of the week.
Yeah,
I'm really excited to watch the Apple Cup on Friday.
I'm just happy that it's coming after the... it's on Friday. So this is the game to watch on Friday. Yeah. Like, this is the game of that day. And it's going to be good.
Well,
I really think this is going to be a hell of a game.
Besides Arizona State, a.k.a. the second Copper choice bowl. Yes. Oh, the second choice bowl.
You didn't get into UCLA, huh? The game.
Here's Arizona State. Oh, you didn't get into Arizona State? Here's Arizona.
That's not fair. Like, you can make fun of a lot of things, but Arizona is not Arizona State's safety school.
Well, I'd rather go to Arizona State than Arizona. You seen the girls at Arizona State? Come on.
I mean,
or the boys? Woohoo!
But you got to live in Maricopa County.
It's sunny. Better than living in North Dakota. I like Arizona State here. They're favored by 3. Kind of a disappointing year for Arizona State, but probably get the win.
This is a chance for like Rich Rod to salvage some dignity out of the season. So I wouldn't be shocked if they won that game.
All right.
I mean, but these are both two terrible teams. So
yeah,
who knows? You know.
We're about to get into an argument about this one. South Carolina, 24-point underdog going to Clemson. Coach Boone's going to get it done this week. This is going to be a close one.
I think you've misjudged what we're going to argue about, because I think when you have a rivalry game, especially a rivalry game where it like actually people care about it, and that's a game where the people care about it, I think you can't. I always take the points when it's a big spread in a rivalry game like that. So I would take the points.
Just not super shocked if Clemson loses. That's all I'm saying. I don't think South Carolina wins, but I'm not shocked if Clemson loses.
Trying to think of the proper word choice. I would be very surprised, but it wouldn't be Hillary loses the election surprise.
Yeah. All right, let's. The last chance to not see Penn State win a national championship, potentially bowl. Michigan State, Penn State, Penn State, a 12-point favorite. They should win this by like 3 touchdowns, yeah. Right?
Yeah, they should kill them.
But we're rooting for you, Michigan.
Although Michigan State.
State
has, I mean, Michigan State is a team, just it's garbage. Like they are one of the worst teams in FBS football in a major conference. But they have played all of their rivals close.
Yeah. And they've got a lot of heart. I think grit and heart.
I don't know if they have heart. I mean, there's a lot of locker room troubles there. Like they've had some major locker room issues.
They showed some heart last week against Ohio State. Sure. In the you're going to work for me one day bowl, Duke and Miami. Miami, a 15.5-point favorite. Duke hasn't been so hot this year, but Miami, I just don't trust them to win by 2 scores. I like Duke here. Catching
points. Yeah. This is the revenge game for last year when, like, Miami won that game even though the guy's knee was down, but the refs missed it, and so he went in and scored a touchdown. Do you remember that play last year on a kickoff? Miami won the game on the last play, and it was a kickoff, and the guy was clearly down, and Duke, yelled about it for, like, 3 months.
It's Duke-Miami. I'm just,
It feels weird for this to be Duke's last game of the season because, like, obviously Duke doesn't give a shit. And yeah. Miami certainly doesn't give a shit about that.
Duke should play like Wake in their last game.
Well, they usually always end with Carolina. And in the last 3 years, or last 3 or 4 years, like Carolina started playing State in the last game, which has Duke people really pissed off. So
let's move on to good old, clean, old fashioned Southern hate. Georgia Tech, Georgia. Georgia, 4-point favorite.
What do they now call this game? Because they're not allowed to call it that anymore, right?
Hey, I believe it's called the Racism Bowl.
Well, that's better.
Yeah, because if your friends get Georgia fan friends on Facebook, you're going to see a lot of like casual racism against Asian
people. Sure.
That's what you're going to see. Tech's coming off. You know, they're not playing horrible right now.
Yeah, Tech's rounding into shape.
Like, yeah. But Georgia's run D has looked really solid in the past. Georgia hasn't played an option team yet, but I'm sure they're going to be prepared for Tech. I kind of think Tech wins regardless, though.
The different thing is that, you know, during the Mark Richt era, it was like, I don't care. Georgia's winning. Like, Mark Richt, I think, lost to Georgia, like, twice. And I think he only lost to
once was
Paul.
On, yeah, and once was on a block extra point.
I think he only lost to Paul once, right?
Yeah, well, last year. Year before last. And it was a blocked field goal or extra point that won the game.
Yeah.
So it was not really on the coach when that happened.
And I think he lost in Paul's first year. So I think he lost twice ever. You know, so Georgia, like, if this was Mark Richt, I would just be very, very confident about Georgia. Because, like, Mark Richt was just, like, not fooled at all by that shit.
Yeah.
But this is Kirby Smart, who is a really dumb guy.
And speaking of dumb, you saw who was a special port contributor, a consultant to the Georgia D, our boy Jeff Van Gorder.
Yeah, the guy who Paul Johnson ripped the tits off of that one time.
So he's into giving some tips.
Yeah, that's not a good decision. Was he still coordinating Notre Dame when Navy like completely destroyed Notre Dame this year?
I want to say he was fired before that.
Okay.
But regardless, Van Gorder's
the fact that Jeff Van Gorder is involved, I'm taking Georgia Tech. Like, that just sealed the deal.
Yeah. All right, let's move on. Some game played in Alabama. Auburn, Alabama. The Iron Bowl. The biggest game in the South. A game that would probably be the biggest game of the week if Auburn didn't choke and lose to Georgia. Alabama's opening up as an 18-point favorite. Auburn starting Jeremy Johnson at quarterback.
Ooh.
But I think the stars are aligning. Jeremy Johnson leaves Auburn, beating Alabama. He leaves a hero. Give me Auburn in the points. Alabama's not beating Auburn by 18. I don't think that's happening.
That is a lot of points.
That's a lot of points. And Alabama doesn't have the run game to really close it out like they used to.
But I really don't like Jeremy Johnson.
Yeah.
Well,
Sean White's questionable, but it's looking like Jeremy Johnson's.
Well, here's the thing. I've picked against Alabama a lot, and it's almost always blown up in my face, so why not do it one more time?
No,
Auburn.
You take Alabama. God damn it. All right, so we both like, I don't think Auburn loses by 18. It's just the Iron Bowl's really important. Alabama's going to claim it's not important when they lose, but it is. The biggest matchup you can possibly get in college basketball, but instead it's football bowl, Kentucky-Louisville. Louisville opening up as a 26-point favorite. I like Kentucky here to get those points.
Nah, this is the one game where I don't follow the take the points, because Kentucky is asshole. Like, that is an asshole team that SEC fans have tricked themselves into thinking is good, because, well, they're like 5-6. They can't be all... No, they're terrible. They're terrible just like the rest of your god-awful conference, and Louisville's going to humiliate them.
I like Kentucky here. Louisville has no heart. Kentucky has a lot of grit and heart.
You don't need heart to beat Kentucky by a bunch. You just need to have, like, a modicum of talent, and they have more than a
after you got bent over and raped on national TV...
Houston is a significantly better team than Kentucky has ever been.
I could see Louisville coming in and not really caring because Petrino is a bad person. So
his teams have always gotten up to play Kentucky, though. Like, that's a game he stresses. I think that may make it worse for Kentucky, because Louisville's going to be embarrassed, and they're going to be like, you know what? Fuck these guys. We need to send a message.
All right. And my favorite game of the weekend, Appalachia State goes to New Mexico State. Appalachia State, 17.5-point favorite. I tease that up to 28. They're going to kill New Mexico State.
Yeah, that's not fair. And why is that game happening?
why is it Southern App State the last game? You think that would make
sense? Yeah, that's weird that they didn't. Yeah.
The Sun Belt's open to go anywhere the last week. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, but you think that you want your rivalry games in the last week. I mean, if Georgia State and Georgia Southern were playing in the last week, at least I'd get it. But they played like a couple weeks ago, so I don't even get that.
Let's move on. The second biggest Pac-12 game of the day, Utah-Colorado. Utah opening up as a 10-point favorite. I think Colorado keeps it close. I like Utah a lot, though.
I think Colorado wins that thing straight up. Like, why?
Sorry. Colorado's the 10-point favorite.
Right? Okay. That's okay. Now I get what you're saying. Like, that seems a little that seems a little much. I'm not sure I believe in Colorado being 10 points better.
Because Utah's a pretty good team. Like, a lot of people don't want to talk about them, but they are. It's a good little team.
I mean, they had a bad week a week ago, but you know. That seems like the one where you make a little bit of money because everybody's overreacting to, what they
saw. I think we both like that there. Let's move on. Florida State. Florida State opening up 7-point favorite. I like Florida here. Florida State's collapsing. Their coach is leaving. Florida's gearing up for a big SEC title game they're going to get killed in. But they don't know that yet. They're hyped. They just beat LSU. I think they win outright. But I like them catching 7.
Florida's a terrible team, but Florida State's kind of ass too. Yeah. Like, that's the thing. Florida State is shitty this year, but I would call them actively crappy. Yeah,
they've got the wheel coming off here, and I like Florida here.
Yeah.
Let's move on to the Academic Bowl.
Ooh.
Tennessee. This is not 7.5 going to Vandy.
Tennessee is not an academic institution. Like, come on.
Yeah. Come on. I like Vandy catching 7 here. Vandy's a good 6 loss
Vandy's
team,
gonna win it straight up.
Yeah,
like, because Butch Jones is terrible and should be fired.
And Tennessee has nothing really to play for anymore with Florida winning last week. So I like Vandy here. Vandy's having a low key good season. Get your 6 wins and don't look too bad when you're in a bowl instead of getting to a bowl at 5-7. Because Vandy's probably going to a bowl regardless.
Because they've got their APR scores. But the big thing, I don't trust teams that have A, no heart, B, bad coaching, who have blown all of their major goals for the season. Because I don't buy that they're going to be geared up to play to their best, knowing that they've lost on everything that they set out to accomplish.
All right.
Like, there is not one goal for this season that Tennessee didn't blow.
Let's move on to the biggest rivalry of the week, the classiest rivalry in all college football, Notre Dame-Southern Cal. Southern Cal, 17-point favorite.
The battle for the jeweled shillelagh.
The battle for a thing that looks like a penis. Give me USC in a blowout. I think 4 touchdowns minimum.
Yeah, I think USC hangs a half a hundred. Brian Kelly probably going to get fired, isn't he?
Yeah, I think he's gone. We didn't really mention that earlier, but Notre Dame just had to vacate there are two good seasons under Brian Kelly. That job's going to be open, and some poor sap's going to take it. So I feel bad.
I think that was the last straw, Brian. I mean, I was pretty adamant all year that he had more time, that he could afford to have a bad season. But like, but now they've got an academic scandal on top of all that. I mean, they had a trainer who was doing the schoolwork for the team in their national champion runner-up season, and it's just, oh boy, like, I don't know how you survive all of that on top of being terrible. And again, like, my favorite thing is Brian Kelly. They asked him if he had any culpability. He said, absolutely none. And Dan Walken on Twitter had a great line. It's like, I'd love to know what Brian Kelly thinks he has any culpability for ever. Like, Brian Kelly will walk into the middle of your dining room, rip a loud fucking stanker, and then go, I didn't do that. That's not my fault. Like, that is a guy who will not take responsibility for anything. He will T-bone your pregnant wife and blame you for it.
All right. Let's move on, though. The biggest game of the day.
Oh, yeah, USC is going to beat them by 700 points.
Yeah. Let's move on to the biggest game of the day. Also, the first game of the day you're probably going to watch. Michigan, Ohio State. Ohio State, favored by 6.5. I've been saying it all year. Give me Ohio State to win, even with those points. Ohio State wins by 2 touchdowns. Michigan's done.
That's deranged.
It's over.
That's deranged.
Michigan's done. Harbaugh's going to go home. He's going to eat boogers, drink milk, because he's a failure, and he failed to beat Ohio State. Give me Ohio State to win and to go to the playoffs.
They need more help to get to the playoffs. I don't think they're going to get in the playoffs. I mean, they got to have Washington State. They got to have Washington State or Michigan State win.
Michigan
to get
State
in.
Is going to beat Penn State. So
well, that's what they got to have. State. The injury to Wilton Spate has changed everything because Michigan
might play this week.
He saw that. I think that's Harbaugh bullshitting. We talked about it obviously a lot, but Rob had, you know, we it was Rob's segment, so we leaned on him. But just to reiterate, it's just John O'Korn last week against Indiana was one of the worst quarterbacks I've ever seen. Anybody in a major school, I've never seen anybody play that badly. I've never seen an actual like FBS quarterback do the Madden thing where you take the hike and sprint 20 yards backwards. I've never seen that before, and he did that. So
this could get ugly. I mean, this is a big game.
I don't think
it'll
get ugly because I don't think Ohio State's going to be able to move the ball at all on Michigan. So I think this is going to be one of those. I think this is going to be a lot like the Alabama LSU game. Where it's just nobody can score. It's close. If Michigan gets some lucky bounces that LSU didn't get, I still think they can win it because their defense is so much better than anything Ohio State has played. Their defense is going to give them a shot at this.
Yep.
And they're going to go hard on Peppers. Like, Peppers is going to be a big part of their offense. But I think Ohio State wins. I think Ohio State wins wins this game 7-3.
All right.
And that's a legit prediction.
Let's move on to my favorite rivalry of the weekend. UMass goes to Hawaii. Hawaii, an 8-point favorite. We started the year with Hawaii. Let's end the year with Hawaii. And sure, Hawaii -8. UMass sucks.
Yeah, UMass is terrible, and that's a lot of travel. That's a lot of travel for a bad team.
But you know what? UMass, you get to spend Thanksgiving in Hawaii. So go you. Good job.
Good scheduling, like fucking random SID who's going to go on that trip with the team.
It's like, who's the school that was on probation and they scheduled Hawaii every year as their last game so they could get a bowl game? That happened. I can't remember.
That sounds like an Ole Miss move.
It might have. It's something like that. Like, they knew
they would have been playing in the Egg Bowl. Oh,
yeah.
We didn't talk about the Egg Bowl.
Oh, the Egg Bowl. I passed by it earlier. I didn't really feel like it mattered.
Mississippi State's going to win. Mississippi State's going to win it straight up.
I like Mississippi State here. The Ole Miss, they're starting a true freshman quarterback, I think.
Everybody on Ole Miss has quit, and they're firing their assistant athletic director who was involved in the Laramie Tunsil stuff. Like, that whole thing is Breaking Bad.
Ole Miss is done. All right,
you
Dan.
Suck again, Rebels.
Yeah, but let's move on to closing segment. What are you looking forward to this Thanksgiving holiday weekend?
Well, I'm looking forward to eating at my grandma's house. I'm looking forward to being around my mom and my dad, my grandma. That'll be a lot of fun. You know, I like my family.
I'm looking forward to this bottle of wine I'm going to drink. I'm looking forward to having a few days off of work.
Yeah, me too. I get a rare
swig of beer for the working man.
Yeah, I get a rare 4 days off from work. So I'm pretty excited. That's what I'm looking forward to, just watching sports with my dad. You can't really be getting drunk and watching football with your dad or hanging out with your buddies from high school, on the Wednesday before Thanksgiving or Black Friday. I'm going to get together with some of my buddies on Saturday and watch the Iron Bowl. I'm just excited to be around people. And to have football be a centerpiece there only makes it better.
Yeah. So. And I just think we got a lot of really cool games this week. I can't wait to see Wake Forest Boston College, which was too important for us to pick.
Yeah.
And, that's my game of the week. Make sure you tune in. I'm just looking forward to not having to do anything except enjoy.
Yeah. So, before we get out of here, Dan, I want everybody to have a great Thanksgiving. Thanks for tuning in. We're thankful for you, the listener. This was our 30th episode. Here's to 30 more, Dan.
Oh man, and 30 more after that.
And then we're over. Just 60.
That's no. It. We're stopping at 90. No,
but forget the mission of the podcast to get Clay Travis's daughter to date a minority. So never forget people. Be thankful for that.
Oh God. And on that bombshell, in honor of the new season of the Grand Tour, on that bombshell, play the music, Jason.